Chapter 10 A New Earth. Astronomers have discovered evidence to suggest that the universe came into existence 15 billion years ago, in a gigantic explosion, and has been expanding ever since. Not only has it been expanding, but it is also growing in complexity and becoming more and more differentiated. Some scientists also postulate that this movement from unity to multiplicity will eventually become reversed. The universe will then stop expanding and begin to contract again, and finally return to the unmanifested, the inconceivable no-thingness out of which it came, and perhaps repeat the cycles of birth, expansion, contraction, and death again and again. For what purpose? Why does the universe go to all the bother of existing? Asks physicist Stephen Hawking, realizing at the same time that no mathematical model could ever supply the answer. If you look within rather than only without, however, you discover that you have an inner and an outer purpose. And since you are a microcosmic reflection of the macrocosm, it follows that the universe too has an inner and outer purpose, inseparable from yours. The outer purpose of the universe is to create form and experience the interaction of forms, the play, the dream, the drama, or whatever you choose to call it. Its inner purpose is to awaken to its formless essence. Then comes the reconciliation of outer and inner purpose, to bring that essence, consciousness, into the world of form and thereby transform the world. The ultimate purpose of that transformation goes far beyond anything the human mind can imagine or comprehend. And yet, on this planet, at this time, that transformation is the task allotted us. That is the reconciliation of outer and inner purpose, the reconciliation of the world and God. Before we look at what relevance the expansion and contraction of the universe has to your own life, we need to bear in mind here that nothing we say about the nature of the universe should be taken as an absolute truth. Neither concepts nor mathematical formulae can explain the infinite. No thought can encapsulate the vastness of the totality. Reality is a unified whole, but thought cuts it up into fragments. This gives rise to fundamental misperceptions. For example, that there are separate things and events, or that this is the cause of that. Every thought implies a perspective, and every perspective, by its very nature, implies limitation, which ultimately means that it is not true, at least not absolutely. Only the whole is true, but the whole cannot be spoken or thought. Seen from beyond the limitations of thinking, and therefore incomprehensible to the human mind, everything is happening now. All that ever has been or will be is now, outside of time, which is a mental construct. As an illustration of relative and absolute truth, consider the sunrise and sunset. When we say the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening, that is true, but only relatively. In absolute terms, it is false. Only from the limited perspective of an observer on or near the planet's surface does the sun rise and set. If you were far out in space, you would see that the sun neither rises nor sets, but that it shines continuously. And yet, even after realizing that, we can continue to speak of the sunrise or sunset, still see its beauty, paint it, write poems about it, even though we now know that it is a relative rather than an absolute truth. So let us continue to speak for a moment of another relative truth, the coming into form of the universe and its return to the formless, which implies the limited perspective of time, and see what relevance this has to your own life. The notion of my own life is, of course, another limited perspective created by thought, another relative truth. There is ultimately no such thing as your life, since you and life are not two, but one. Your life. The coming into manifestation of the world, as well as its return to the unmanifested, its expansion and contraction, are two universal movements that we could call the outgoing and the return home. Those two movements are reflected throughout the universe in many ways, such as in the incessant expansion and contraction of your heart, as well as in the inhalation and exhalation of your breath. They are also reflected in the cycles of sleep and wakefulness. Each night, without knowing it, you return to the unmanifested source of all life when you enter the stage of deep, dreamless sleep, and then re-emerge again in the morning, replenished. Those two movements, the outgoing and the return, are also reflected in each person's life cycles. Out of nowhere, so to speak, you suddenly appear in this world. Birth is followed by expansion. There's not only physical growth, but also growth of knowledge, activities, possessions, experiences. Your sphere of influence expands and life becomes increasingly complex. This is a time when you are mainly concerned with finding or pursuing your outer purpose. Usually, there's also a corresponding growth of the ego, which is identification with all the above things. And so your form identity becomes more and more defined. This is also the time when outer purpose, growth, tends to become usurped by the ego, which, unlike nature, does not know when to stop in its pursuit of expansion and has a voracious appetite for more. And then, just when you thought you made it or that you belong here, the return movement begins. Perhaps people close to you begin to die, people who were a part of your world. Then your physical form weakens. Your sphere of influence shrinks. Instead of becoming more, you now become less, and the ego reacts to this with increasing anxiety or depression. Your world is beginning to contract, and you may find you are not in control anymore. Instead of acting upon life, life now acts upon you by slowly reducing your world. The consciousness that identified with form is now experiencing the sunset, the dissolution of form. And then one day, you too disappear. Your armchair is still there, but instead of you sitting in it, there's just an empty space. You went back to where you came from just a few years ago. Each person's life, each life form, in fact, represents a world, a unique way in which the universe experiences itself. And when your form dissolves, a world comes to an end, one of countless worlds. Awakening and the return movement. The return movement in a person's life, the weakening or dissolution of form, whether through old age, illness, disability, loss, or some kind of personal tragedy, carries great potential for spiritual awakening, the disidentification of consciousness from form. Since there's very little spiritual truth in our contemporary culture, not many people recognize this as an opportunity, and so when it happens to them or to someone close to them, they think there's something dreadfully wrong, something that should not be happening. There is in our civilization a great deal of ignorance about the human condition, and the more spiritually ignorant you are, the more you suffer. For many people, particularly in the West, death is no more than an abstract concept, and so they have no idea what happens to the human form when it approaches dissolution. Most decrepit and old people are shut away in nursing homes. Dead bodies, which in some older cultures are on open display for all to see, are hidden away. Try to see a dead body, and you will find that it is virtually illegal, except if the deceased is a close family member. in funeral homes, they even apply makeup to the face. You're only allowed to see a sanitized version of death. Since death is only an abstract concept to them, most people are totally unprepared for the dissolution of form that awaits them. When it approaches, there's shock, incomprehension, despair, and great fear. Nothing makes sense anymore, because all the meaning and purpose that life had for them was associated with accumulating, succeeding, building, protecting, and sense gratification. It was associated with the outward movement and identification with form, that is to say, ego. Most people cannot conceive of any meaning when their life, their world, is being demolished. And yet, potentially, there's even deeper meaning here than in the outward movement. The onset of old age, through loss or personal tragedy, that the spiritual dimension would traditionally come into people's lives. This is to say, their inner purpose would emerge only as their outer purpose collapsed and the shell of the ego would begin to crack open. Such events represent the beginning of the return movement towards the dissolution of form. In most ancient cultures, there must have been an intuitive understanding of this process, which is why old people were respected and revered. They were the repositories of wisdom and provided the dimension of depth without which no civilization can survive for long. In our civilization, which is totally identified with the outer and ignorant of the inner dimension of spirit, the word old has mainly negative connotations. It equals useless, and so we regard it as almost an insult to refer to someone as old. To avoid the word, we use euphemisms such as elderly and senior. The First Nation's grandmother is a figure of great dignity. Today's granny is, at best, cute. Why is old considered useless? Because in old age, the emphasis shifts from doing to being, and our civilization, which is lost in doing, knows nothing of being. It asks, being? What do you do with it? In some people, the outward movement of growth and expansion gets severely disrupted by a seemingly premature onset of the return movement, the dissolving of form. In some cases, it is a temporary disruption, in others, a permanent one. We believe that a young child should not have to face death. But the fact is that some children do have to face the death of one or both parents through illness or accident, or even the possibility of their own death. Some children are born with disabilities that severely restrict the natural expansion of their lives. Or some severe limitation comes into a person's life at a relatively young age. The disruption of the outward movement at a time when it is not meant to be happening can also potentially bring forth an early spiritual awakening in a person. Ultimately, nothing happens that is not meant to happen, which is to say, nothing happens that is not part of the greater whole and its purpose. Thus, destruction or disruption of outer purpose can lead to finding your inner purpose and subsequently the arising of a deeper outer purpose that is aligned with the inner. Children who have suffered greatly often grow into young adults who are mature beyond their years. What is lost on the level of form is gained on the level of essence. In the traditional figure of the blind seer or the wounded healer of ancient cultures and legend, some great loss or disability on the level of form has become an opening into spirit. When you've had a direct experience of the unstable nature of all forms, you will likely never overvalue form again, and thus lose yourself by blindly pursuing it or attaching yourself to it. The opportunity that the dissolution of form, and in particular old age, represents is only just beginning to be recognized in our contemporary culture. In the majority of people, that opportunity is still tragically missed, because the ego identifies with the return movement just as it identified with the outward movement. This results in a hardening of the egoic shell, a contraction rather than an opening. The diminished ego then spends the rest of its days whining or complaining, trapped in fear or anger, self-pity, guilt, blame, or other negative mental-emotional states or avoidance strategies, such as attachment to memories and thinking and talking about the past. When the ego is no longer identified with the return movement in a person's life, old age or approaching death becomes what it is meant to be, an opening into the realm of spirit. I have met old people who were living embodiments of this process. They had become radiant. Their weakening forms had become transparent to the light of consciousness. On the new earth, old age will be universally recognized and highly valued as a time for the flowering of consciousness. For those who are still lost in the outer circumstances of their lives, it will be a time of a late homecoming, when they awaken to their inner purpose. For many others, it will represent an intensification and a culmination of the awakening process. Going movement. The natural expansion of one's life that comes with the outward movement has traditionally been usurped by the ego and used for its own expansion. "Look what I can do. I bet you can't do that," says the small child to another as he discovers the increasing strength and abilities of his body. That is one of the ego's first attempts to enhance itself through identification with the outward movement and the concept of more than you, and to strengthen itself by diminishing others. It is, of course, only the beginning of the ego's many misperceptions. However, as your awareness increases and the ego is no longer running your life, you don't have to wait for your world to shrink or collapse through old age or personal tragedy in order for you to awaken to your inner purpose. As the new consciousness is beginning to emerge on the planet, an increasing number of people no longer need to be shaken to have an awakening. They embrace the awakening process voluntarily, even while still engaged in the outward cycle of growth and expansion. When that cycle is no longer usurped by the ego, the spiritual dimension will come into this world through the outward movement, thought, speech, action, creation, as powerfully as through the return movement, stillness, being, and dissolution of form. Until now, human intelligence, which is no more than a minute aspect of universal intelligence, has been distorted and misused by the ego. I call that intelligence in the service of madness. Splitting the atom requires great intelligence. Using that intelligence for building and stockpiling atom bombs is insane or, at best, extremely unintelligent. Stupidity is relatively harmless, but intelligent stupidity is highly dangerous. This intelligent stupidity, for which one could find countless obvious examples, is threatening our survival as a species. Without the impairment of egoic dysfunction, our intelligence comes into full alignment with the outgoing cycle of universal intelligence and its impulse to create. We become conscious participants in the creation of form. It is not we who create, but universal intelligence that creates through us. We don't identify with what we create and so don't lose ourselves in what we do. We are learning that the act of creation may involve energy of the highest intensity, but that it is not hard work or stressful. We need to understand the difference between stress and intensity, as we shall see. Struggle or stress is a sign that the ego has returned, as are negative reactions when we encounter obstacles. The force behind the ego's wanting creates enemies, that is to say, reaction in the form of an opposing force equal in intensity. The stronger the ego, the stronger the sense of separateness between people. The only actions that do not cause opposing reactions are those that are aimed at the good of all. They are inclusive, not exclusive. They join. They don't separate. They are not for my country, but for all of humanity. Not for my religion, but the emergence of consciousness in all human beings. Not for my species, but for all sentient beings and all of nature. We are also learning that action, although necessary, is only a secondary factor in manifesting our external reality. The primary factor in creation is consciousness. No matter how active we are, how much effort we make, our state of consciousness creates our world, and if there's no change on that inner level, no amount of action will make any difference. We would only recreate modified versions of the same world again and again, a world that is an external reflection of the ego. Consciousness is already conscious. It is the unmanifested, the eternal. The universe, however, is only gradually becoming conscious. Consciousness itself is timeless and therefore does not evolve. It was never born and does not die. When consciousness becomes the manifested universe, it appears to be subject to time and to undergo an evolutionary process. No human mind is capable of comprehending fully the reason for this process. But we can glimpse it within ourselves and become a conscious participant in it. Consciousness is the intelligence, the organizing principle behind the arising of form. Consciousness has been preparing forms for millions of years so that it can express itself through them in the manifested. Although the unmanifested realm of pure consciousness could be considered another dimension, it is not separate from this dimension of form. Form and formlessness interpenetrate. The unmanifested flows into this dimension as awareness, inner space, presence. How does it do that? Through the human form that becomes conscious and thus fulfills its destiny. The human form was created for this higher purpose, and millions of other forms prepared the ground for it. Consciousness incarnates into the manifested dimension, that is to say, it becomes form. When it does so, it enters a dreamlike state. Intelligence remains, but consciousness becomes unconscious of itself. It loses itself in form, becomes identified with forms. This could be described as the descent of the divine into matter. At that stage in the evolution of the universe, the entire outgoing movement takes place in that dreamlike state. Glimpses of awakening come only at the moment of the dissolution of an individual form, that is to say, death. And then begins the next incarnation, the next identification with form, the next individual dream that is part of the collective dream. When the lion tears apart the body of the zebra, the consciousness that incarnated into the zebra form detaches itself from the dissolving form and, for a brief moment, awakens to its essential, immortal nature as consciousness, and then immediately falls back into sleep and reincarnates into another form. When the lion becomes old and cannot hunt anymore, as it draws its last breath, there's again the briefest of glimpses of an awakening, followed by another dream of form. On our planet, the human ego represents the final stage of universal sleep, the identification of consciousness with form. It was a necessary stage in the evolution of consciousness. The human brain is a highly differentiated form through which consciousness enters this dimension. It contains approximately 100 billion nerve cells, called neurons, about the same number as there are stars in our galaxy, which could be seen as a macrocosmic brain. The brain does not create consciousness, but consciousness created the brain, the most complex physical form on Earth, for its expression. When the brain gets damaged, it does not mean you lose consciousness. It means consciousness can no longer use that form to enter this dimension. You cannot lose consciousness because it is, in essence, who you are. You can only lose something that you have, but you cannot lose something that you are. Awakened doing is the outer aspect of the next stage in the evolution of consciousness on our planet. The closer we get to the end of our present evolutionary stage, the more dysfunctional the ego becomes, in the same way that a caterpillar becomes dysfunctional just before it transforms into a butterfly. But the new consciousness is arising even as the old dissolves. We are in the midst of a momentous event in the evolution of human consciousness, but they won't be talking about it in the news tonight. On our planet, and perhaps simultaneously in many parts of our galaxy and beyond, consciousness is awakening from the dream of form. This does not mean all forms, the world, are going to dissolve, although quite a few almost certainly will. It means consciousness can now begin to create form without losing itself in it. It can remain conscious of itself, even while it creates and experiences form. Why should it continue to create and experience form? For the enjoyment of it. How does consciousness do that? Through awakened humans who have learned the meaning of awakened doing. Awakened doing is the alignment of your outer purpose, what you do, with your inner purpose, awakening and staying awake. Through awakened doing, you become one with the outgoing purpose of the universe. Consciousness flows through you into this world. It flows into your thoughts and inspires them. It flows into what you do and guides and empowers it. Not what you do, but how you do what you do determines whether you are fulfilling your destiny. And how you do what you do is determined by your state of consciousness. A reversal of our priorities comes about when the main purpose for doing what you do becomes the doing itself, or rather, the current of consciousness that flows into what you do. That current of consciousness is what determines quality. Another way of putting it, in any situation and in whatever you do, your state of consciousness is the primary factor. The situation and what you do is secondary. Future success is dependent upon and inseparable from the consciousness out of which the actions emanate. That can be either the reactive force of the ego or the alert attention of awakened consciousness. All truly successful action comes out of that field of alert attention, rather than from ego and conditioned unconscious thinking. The three modalities of awakened doing. There are three ways in which consciousness can flow into what you do and thus through you into this world. Three modalities in which you can align your life with the creative power of the universe. Modality means the underlying energy frequency that flows into what you do and connects your actions with the awakened consciousness that is emerging into this world. What you do will be dysfunctional and of the ego unless it arises out of one of these three modalities. They may change during the course of a day, although one of them may be dominant during a certain stage in your life. Each modality is appropriate to certain situations. The modalities of awakened doing are acceptance, enjoyment, and enthusiasm. Each one represents a certain vibrational frequency of consciousness. You need to be vigilant to make sure that one of them operates whenever you are engaged in doing anything at all, from the most simple task to the most complex. If you are not in the state of either acceptance, enjoyment, or enthusiasm, look closely and you will find that you are creating suffering for yourself and others. Whatever you cannot enjoy doing, you can at least accept that this is what you have to do. Acceptance means, for now, This is what this situation, this moment, requires me to do, and so I do it willingly. We already spoke at length about the importance of inner acceptance of what happens. And acceptance of what you have to do is just another aspect of it. For example, you probably won't be able to enjoy changing the flat tire on your car at night in the middle of nowhere and in pouring rain, let alone be enthusiastic about it. But you can bring acceptance to it. Performing an action in the state of acceptance means you are at peace while you do it. That peace is a subtle energy vibration which then flows into what you do. On the surface, acceptance looks like a passive state, but in reality it is active and creative because it brings something entirely new into this world. That peace, that subtle energy vibration, is consciousness, and one of the ways in which it enters this world is through surrendered action, one aspect of which is acceptance. If you can neither enjoy or bring acceptance to what you do, stop. Otherwise, you are not taking responsibility for the only thing you can really take responsibility for, which also happens to be the one thing that really matters, your state of consciousness. And if you are not taking responsibility for your state of consciousness, you are not taking responsibility for life. Enjoyment. The peace that comes with surrendered action turns into a sense of aliveness when you actually enjoy what you are doing. Enjoyment is the second modality of awakened doing. On the new earth, enjoyment will replace wanting as the motivating power behind people's actions. Wanting arises from the ego's delusion that you are a separate fragment that is disconnected from the power that lies behind all creation. Through enjoyment, you link into that universal creative power itself. When you make the present moment instead of past and future the focal point of your life, your ability to enjoy what you do, and with it the quality of your life, increases dramatically. Joy is the dynamic aspect of being. When the creative power of the universe becomes conscious of itself, it manifests as joy. You don't have to wait for something meaningful to come into your life so that you can finally enjoy what you do. There's more meaning in joy than you will ever need. The waiting to start living syndrome is one of the most common delusions of the unconscious state. Expansion and positive change on the outer level is much more likely to come into your life if you can enjoy what you are doing already, instead of waiting for some change so that you can start enjoying what you do. Don't ask your mind for permission to enjoy what you do. All you will get is plenty of reasons why you can't enjoy it. "Not now," the mind will say. "Can't you see I'm busy? There's no time. Maybe tomorrow you can start enjoying." That tomorrow will never come, unless you begin enjoying what you are doing now. When you say, "I enjoy doing this or that," it is really a misperception. It makes it appear that the joy comes from what you do, but that is not the case. Joy does not come from what you do. It flows into what you do, and thus into this world, from deep within you. The misperception that joy comes from what you do is normal, and it is also dangerous because it creates the belief that joy is something that can be derived from something else, such as an activity or a thing. You then look to the world to bring you joy, happiness. But it cannot do that. This is why many people live in constant frustration. The world is not giving them what they think they need. Then what is the relationship between something that you do and the state of joy? You will enjoy any activity in which you are fully present, any activity that is not just a means to an end. It isn't the action you perform that you really enjoy, but the deep sense of aliveness that flows into it. That aliveness is one with who you are. This means that when you enjoy doing something, you are really experiencing the joy of being in its dynamic aspect. That's why anything you enjoy doing connects you with the power behind all creation. It will bring empowerment and creative expansion into your life. Make a list of a number of everyday routine activities that you perform frequently. Include activities that you may consider uninteresting, boring, tedious, irritating, or stressful. But don't include anything that you hate or detest doing. That's the case either for acceptance or for stopping what you do. The list may include traveling to and from work, buying groceries, doing your laundry, or anything that you find tedious or stressful in your daily work. Then, whenever you are engaged in those activities, let them be a vehicle for alertness. Be absolutely present in what you do and sense the alert, alive stillness within you in the background of the activity. You will soon find that what you do in such a state of heightened awareness, instead of being stressful, tedious, or irritating, is actually becoming enjoyable. To be more precise, what you are enjoying is not really the outward action, but the inner dimension of consciousness that flows into the action. This is finding the joy of being in what you are doing. If you feel your life lacks significance, or is too stressful or tedious, it is because you haven't brought that dimension into your life yet. Being conscious in what you do has not yet become your main aim. The new earth arises as more and more people discover that their main purpose in life is to bring the light of consciousness into this world and so use whatever they do as a vehicle for consciousness. The joy of being is the joy of being conscious. Awakened consciousness then takes over from ego and begins to run your life. You may then find that an activity that you have been engaged in for a long time naturally begins to expand into something much bigger when it becomes empowered by consciousness. Some of those people who, through creative action, enrich the lives of many others simply do what they enjoy doing most without wanting to achieve or become anything through that activity. They may be musicians, artists, writers, scientists, teachers, or builders, or they may bring into manifestation new social or business structures, enlightened businesses. Sometimes, for a few years, their sphere of influence remains small, and then it can happen that suddenly or gradually a wave of creative empowerment flows into what they do, and their activity expands beyond anything they could have imagined and touches countless others. In addition to enjoyment, an intensity is now added to what they do, and with it comes a creativity that goes beyond anything an ordinary human could accomplish. But don't let it go to your head, because up there is where a remnant of ego may be hiding. You are still an ordinary human. What is extraordinary is what comes through you into this world. But that essence you share with all beings. The 14th century Persian poet and Sufi master Hafiz expresses this truth beautifully. I am a hole in a flute that the Christ's breath moves through. Listen to this music. Then there's another way of creative manifestation that may come to those who remain true to their inner purpose of awakening. Suddenly, one day, they know what their outer purpose is. They have a great vision, a goal, and from then on they work towards implementing that goal. Their goal or vision is usually connected in some way to something that on a smaller scale they are doing and enjoy doing already. This is where the third modality of awakened doing arises. Enthusiasm. Enthusiasm means there's deep enjoyment in what you do, plus the added element of a goal or a vision that you work towards. When you add a goal to the enjoyment of what you do, the energy field or vibrational frequency changes. a certain degree of what we might call structural tension is now added to enjoyment. And so it turns into enthusiasm. At the height of creative activity fueled by enthusiasm, there will be enormous intensity and energy behind what you do. You will feel like an arrow that is moving towards the target and enjoying the journey. To an onlooker, it may appear that you are under stress, but the intensity of enthusiasm has nothing to do with stress. When you want to arrive at your goal more than you want to be doing what you are doing, you become stressed. The balance between enjoyment and structural tension is lost, and the latter has won. When there is stress, it is usually a sign that the ego has returned, and you are cutting yourself off from the creative power of the universe. Instead, there's only the force and strain of egoic wanting, and so you have to struggle and work hard to make it. Stress always diminishes both the quality and effectiveness of what you do under its influence. There's also a strong link between stress and negative emotions, such as anxiety and anger. It is toxic to the body and is now becoming recognized as one of the main causes of the so-called degenerative diseases such as cancer and heart disease. Unlike stress, enthusiasm has a high energy frequency and so resonates with the creative power of the universe. This is why Ralph Waldo Emerson said that nothing great has ever been achieved without enthusiasm. The word enthusiasm comes from the ancient Greek, en and theos, meaning in God, and the related word enthusiasein means to be possessed by a god. With enthusiasm, you will find that you don't have to do it all by yourself. In fact, there's nothing of significance that you can do by yourself. Sustained enthusiasm brings into existence a wave of creative energy, and all you have to do then is ride the wave. Enthusiasm brings an enormous empowerment into what you do, so that all those who have not accessed that power would look upon your achievements in awe and may equate them with who you are. You, however, know the truth that Jesus pointed to when he said, "I can of my own self do nothing." Unlike egoic wanting, which creates opposition in direct proportion to the intensity of its wanting, enthusiasm never opposes. It is non-confrontational. Its activity does not create winners and losers. It is based on inclusion, not exclusion of others. It does not need to use and manipulate people, because it is the power of creation itself and so does not need to take energy from some secondary source. The ego's wanting always tries to take from something or someone. Enthusiasm gives out of its own abundance. When enthusiasm encounters obstacles in the form of adverse situations or uncooperative people, it never attacks but walks around them or, by yielding or embracing, turns the opposing energy into a helpful one, the foe into a friend. Enthusiasm and the ego cannot coexist. One implies the absence of the other. Enthusiasm knows where it is going, but at the same time it is deeply at one with the present moment, the source of its aliveness, its joy, and its power. Enthusiasm wants nothing because it lacks nothing. It is at one with life, and no matter how dynamic the enthusiasm-inspired activities are, you don't lose yourself in them. And there remains always a still but intensely alive space at the center of the wheel, a core of peace in the midst of activity that is both the source of all and untouched by it all. Through enthusiasm, you enter into full alignment with the outgoing creative principle of the universe, but without identifying with its creations, that is to say, without ego. No attachment, one of the great sources of suffering. Once a wave of creative energy has passed, structural tension diminishes again and joy in what you are doing remains. nobody can live in enthusiasm all the time. The new wave of creative energy may come later and lead to renewed enthusiasm. When the return movement towards the dissolution of form sets in, enthusiasm no longer serves you. Enthusiasm belongs to the outgoing cycle of life. It is only through surrender that you can align yourself with the return movement, the journey home. To sum up, enjoyment of what you are doing, combined with a goal or vision that you work towards, becomes enthusiasm. Even though you have a goal, what you are doing in the present moment needs to remain the focal point of your attention. Otherwise, you will fall out of alignment with universal purpose. Make sure your vision or goal is not an inflated image of yourself and therefore a concealed form of ego, such as wanting to become a movie star, a famous writer, or a wealthy entrepreneur. Also make sure your goal is not focused on having this or that, such as a mansion by the sea, your own company, or $10 million in the bank. An enlarged image of yourself or a vision of yourself having this or that are all static goals and therefore don't empower you. Instead, make sure your goals are dynamic, that is to say, point towards an activity that you are engaged in and through which you are connected to other human beings as well as to the whole. Instead of seeing yourself as a famous actor and writer and so on, see yourself inspiring countless people with your work and enriching their lives. Feel how that activity enriches or deepens not only your life but that of countless others. Feel yourself being an opening through which energy flows from the unmanifested source of all life through you for the benefit of all. All this implies that your goal or vision is then already a reality within you, on the level of mind and of feeling. Enthusiasm is the power that transfers the mental blueprint into the physical dimension. That is the creative use of mind, and that is why there is no wanting involved. You cannot manifest what you want, you can only manifest what you already have. You may get what you want through hard work and stress, but that is not the way of the new earth. Jesus gave the key to the creative use of mind and to the conscious manifestation of form when he said, "Whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." The frequency holders. The outward movement into form does not express itself with equal intensity in all people. Some feel a strong urge to build, create, become involved, achieve, make an impact upon the world. If they are unconscious, their ego will, of course, take over and use the energy of the outgoing cycle for its own purposes. This, however, also greatly reduces the flow of creative energy available to them, and increasingly they need to rely on efforting to get what they want. If they are conscious, those people in whom the outward movement is strong will be highly creative. Others, after the natural expansion that comes with growing up has run its course, lead an outwardly unremarkable, seemingly more passive, and relatively uneventful existence. They are more inward-looking by nature, and for them the outward movement into form is minimal. They would rather return home than go out. They have no desire to get strongly involved in or change the world. If they have any ambitions, they usually don't go beyond finding something to do that gives them a degree of independence. Some of them find it hard to fit into this world. Some are lucky enough to find a protective niche where they can lead a relatively sheltered life, a job that provides them with a regular income or small business of their own. Some may feel drawn towards living in a spiritual community or monastery. Others may become dropouts and live on the margins of a society they feel they have little in common with. Some turn to drugs because they find living in this world too painful. Others eventually become healers or spiritual teachers, that is to say, teachers of being. They would probably have been called contemplatives. There is no place for them, it seems, in our contemporary civilization. On the arising new earth, however, their role is just as vital as that of the creators, the doers, the reformers. Their function is to anchor the frequency of the new consciousness on this planet. I call them the frequency holders. They are here to generate consciousness through the activities of daily life, through their interactions with others, as well as through just being. In this way, they endow the seemingly insignificant with profound meaning. Their task is to bring spacious stillness into this world by being absolutely present in whatever they do. There is consciousness and therefore quality in what they do, even the simplest task. Their purpose is to do everything in a sacred manner. As each human being is an integral part of the collective human consciousness, they affect the world much more deeply than is visible on the surface of their lives. The New Earth is no utopia. Is the notion of a New Earth not just another utopian vision? Not at all. All utopian visions have this in common: the mental projection of a future time when all will be well, we will be saved, there will be peace and harmony and the end of our problems. There have been many such utopian visions. Some ended in disappointment, others in disaster. At the core of all utopian visions lies one of the main structural dysfunctions of the old consciousness: looking to the future for salvation. The only existence the future actually has is as a thought form in your mind. So when you look to the future for salvation, you are unconsciously looking to your own mind for salvation. You are trapped in form, and that is ego. "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth," writes the biblical prophet. The foundation for a new earth is a new heaven, the awakened consciousness. The earth, external reality, is only its outer reflection. The arising of a new heaven and, by implication, a new earth are not future events that are going to make us free. Nothing is going to make us free, because only the present moment can make us free. That realization is the awakening. Awakening as a future event has no meaning, because awakening is the realization of presence. So the new heaven, the awakened consciousness, is not a future state to be achieved. A new heaven and a new earth are arising within you at this moment. And if they are not arising at this moment, they are no more than a thought in your head, and therefore not arising at all. What did Jesus tell his disciples? Heaven is right here in the midst of you. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus makes a prediction that to this day few people have understood. He says, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." In modern versions of the Bible, meek is translated as humble. Who are the meek or the humble, and what does it mean that they shall inherit the earth? The meek are the egoless. They are those who have awakened to their essential true nature as consciousness, and recognize that essence in all others, all life forms. They live in the surrendered state, and so feel their oneness with the whole and the source. They embody the awakened consciousness that is changing all aspects of life on our planet, including nature, because life on Earth is inseparable from the human consciousness that perceives and interacts with it. That is the sense in which the meek will inherit the Earth. A new species is arising on the planet. It is arising now, and you are it.
We hope that you've enjoyed this production of A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced by Janet Stark. A New Earth is a production of Penguin Audio, a division of Penguin Group USA Inc., and Books on Tape. Copyright 2005. All rights reserved. The book A New Earth is available wherever Dutton books are sold.
Tonight we're coming to you with a special two-hour finale of our New Earth webcast series. For 10 weeks, we've all met every Monday night for a global conversation. It's been really quite special, a global conversation about consciousness from the UK to Hong Kong to Russia to all 50 states here in America. I just again want to say thank you to every one of you for helping us to create this new earth here with Eckhart Tolle and with me. So many of you have written to say that you want this forum to continue, so beginning next Monday, May 12th, I hope you'll join me for the start of my Soul Series webcast here on Oprah.com. For the first time, we'll be broadcasting the videotape sessions of my XM radio show. Many of you didn't know I have a radio show. Yeah, I have a day job, a night job, a middle job, a day job. It's where I get to talk to spiritual teachers and have been doing so for quite some time. Spiritual teachers and thinkers and scholars about this, my favorite subject, the evolution of our soul. So keep Mondays reserved for Oprah.com. You can begin downloading next Monday. Tonight's the last chapter, chapter 10 of A New Earth. And before we get started, let's begin with silence.
Yes.
Would you like to lead us, sir?
A moment of stillness. Mm-hmm. Now, as you know, you need to put your attention somewhere in order to find the stillness. The attention needs to move out of the dimension of thinking. Mm-hmm. So we have practiced in the past with putting our attention into the inner feeling of aliveness in the body. Mm-hmm. We've also, I believe, put our attention on our breath. And we've put our attention on sense perceptions, whatever we can see or hear outside. But this time we go one step further, and I suggest this is a little bit more subtle. As we enter this moment of stillness, we put our attention on the fact that we are conscious. In other words, we become aware that there is a light in us, I'm using light metaphorically, a presence, a space of awareness that is pure attention. So instead of being aware of something, our breath or the inner body or sense perceptions, let's just be aware that we are aware. You feel your own presence and become still.
Let's be aware that we are aware and become still. That was good.
Yeah.
I think even Dean, the stage manager, became aware. Right, Dean?
Good.
The themes of Chapter 10 are truly the culmination, I think, of what all of our work has been about, how to bring consciousness to every moment and to every action of our lives, and in the process, learning that we are far greater than anything that we could have imagined ourselves to be. So we're going to get started. You talk about the brief history of your life on page 282, the coming into manifestation of the world as its return to the unmanifested, its expansion and contraction. On the previous page, you talked about the earth expanding, the universe really, expanding and contracting. Those two movements are reflected throughout the universe in many ways, such as in the incessant expansion and contraction of our heart as well as the inhaling and exhaling of our breath. They're also reflected in the cycles of sleep and wakefulness. Each night, without knowing it, I love this, you return to the unmanifested, capital S, source of all life, when you enter the stage of deep, dreamless sleep, and then reemerge again in the morning, replenished. Those two movements, the outgoing and return, are also reflected in each person's life cycles. Out of nowhere, so to speak, you suddenly appear in this world. Birth is followed by expansion. There's not only physical growth, but also growth of knowledge and activities and possessions. This is a time where you're mainly concerned with finding or pursuing your outer purpose. Each person's life, each life form, in fact, represents a world, a unique way in which the universe experiences itself. And when your form dissolves, a world comes to an end out of countless worlds. I thought that was so beautiful. That's the bottom of page 283, everybody. Each person's life, each life form, in fact, represents a world, a unique way in which the universe experiences itself. So we are manifestations of the universe experiencing itself as each of us.
Yes. And that takes you out of this illusion that all you are is this limited little person. This is on the surface of things, you are this person with a name and a form. But in the depths of your being, you are the universe experiencing itself in this form. And this, just this thought brings about a little shift in the way in which you perceive yourself.
And everybody else.
Yes, yes.
We are the universe, or the source of all life, or the creator, or God, whichever name you choose to use, expressing itself in our particular form.
Yes, in and through this form. So there's not, people usually perceive themselves as being, this is me, mm-hmm. and there's the universe,
right.
or the world, and there's the me and the rest of the world. But you are the universe, you are the life.
We're not
separate. Life, not separate.
Yeah. Each person's life, each life form represents a world, a unique way in which the universe experiences itself. And when your form dissolves, a world comes to an end, one of countless worlds. Wow, that's really powerful. So let's talk about the awakening and the return movement. What is the return movement in a person's life?
Usually you start off with the outward movement as you grow up and as you go into adolescence and adulthood. You start building your life, you acquire experiences, you acquire knowledge, you acquire possessions, your sphere of influence extends, so that's the expansion, you grow, and usually that goes up to a certain age, it varies from person to person, unless, I talk about that also, unless this period of expansion is interrupted by some traumatic event, mm-hmm. we can come to that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So there's the expansion, and then when people reach a certain age, suddenly a different movement starts. Things, the body is no longer as strong, not working so well anymore. People around you begin to die. They reach a certain age. And so there's another movement that at some point comes into people's lives, which we could call the dissolution of form. It's mm-hmm. gradually happening. Mm-hmm. And in our culture, we don't like to talk about that. And this is why most old people are hidden away in homes. You rarely see. You have to go to third world countries to really see the reality of
what it's
human
like to
life.
Grow older.
Yes.
And also, we have such a fear of it. And it is, and not just a fear, a disdain for it. So we do everything to make ourselves look younger. Everything is about looking younger, being younger, younger,
yes.
younger, younger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, the return movement is also when where the spiritual dimension can come into your life very strongly, when the form with which perhaps for many years you had been identified, which is the physical form and the form of my life, all the things that you had built up and identified with, mm-hmm. your job, your status, your profession, your possessions. And that when that begins to become a little bit shaky, then it is very often at that point that there's the possibility for the spiritual dimension to come into your life, when the solidity of the outer forms is becomes diminished.
Right.
So traditionally, there's still the in India, for example, there's still a tradition when a man reaches a certain age, he withdraws from society. Some people still practice it, but not so many these days. Mm-hmm. He even leaves his family if he knows that his family is being looked after. He leaves and becomes a solitary mendicant or monk in order to go deeply within. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to do that. All we need to be aware is that when the return movement starts, when the forms that you had identified with begin to break down, that is a wonderful time for going back home, for the return movement into spirituality, so that you become aware of your own consciousness, mm-hmm. rather than what consciousness had identified with. That was your life before.
You mean form?
Form, yes.
And so it's sort of the return back to formlessness.
Yes, but consciously. It's the conscious return to see what is the source of my very being. Mm-hmm. You could say it's when the world begins to become shaky, then you go back to the source out of which it all came, which is God, ultimately, God within, mm-hmm. the source within. So there's these two movements in a person's life. Now, in our civilization, the whole civilization
is the outgoing and the return home.
And the return. Now, our civilization is only interested, it seems, in the outgoing movement. People are interested in accumulating, in building up, in creating, making a life for yourself, being successful. Of course, that has its place. That's
right.
Fine. What our civilization knows very little about is the return movement.
You say, then one day, you too disappear. Your armchair is still there, but instead of you sitting in it, there's just an empty space. You went back to where you came from just a few years ago. Each person's life, each life form, in fact, represents a world, a unique way in which the universe experiences itself. And when your form dissolves, a world comes to an end, one of countless worlds. A return movement in a person's life, the weakening or dissolution of form, whether through old age, illness, disability, loss, or some kind of personal tragedy, carries great potential for spiritual awakening. That's why you say some older people become sort of luminescent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some, and others have a resistance against the return movement. The ego identifies with the weakening body, for example. Mm-hmm. And so negative inner states arise. People become angry or bitter or complain all the time or talk about the past all the time. Then they resist what's happening.
Yeah, because they can't accept.
Yes.
They can't accept, which we're going to talk about, those three modalities: acceptance,
yes. Yes.
Enjoyment, and enthusiasm.
Yes. So here comes this: the acceptance of when old age approaches, the acceptance that this can be also very beautiful if you're open to that.
You say because in old age the emphasis, the top of 286, everybody. Because in old age, the emphasis shifts from doing to being, and our civilization, which is lost in doing, knows nothing of being. It asks being, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
What do you do with it? Yeah. But the older you get, the more conscious you become that being is of more value to you than doing.
Doing, yes.
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 And the whole point of a new earth is for everybody to realize, no matter what age you are, that being is of more value to us than doing.
Yes.
And that it's only the being that you bring into your doing that matters.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you don't have to wait for old age for this to happen. Mm-hmm. You can become conscious of this at any age. And then the way in which you interact with the world is very different.
Right, 287, when the ego is no longer identified with the return movement in a person's life, old age or approaching death becomes what it's meant to be, an opening into the realm of spirit. And many times, obviously, you don't have to approach death in order to open into the realm of spirit, as so many of you have told us in your message boards, that this whole book is about opening to the realm of spirit. Okay, you say In a new earth, on our new earth, old age will be universally recognized and highly valued as a time for the flowering of consciousness.
Yes. In a way, we lost it because that was already there in ancient cultures where old age was greatly honored. For example, in the Native American culture, a grandmother is it when somebody is called a grandmother, it's a title of great distinction, and everybody has great respect for the grandmother because the grandmother embodies that wisdom. Not only wisdom, she also embodies the opening into the realm of spirit. The elder, of a tribe, for example, they embody the opening into the realm of spirit, and through those old people, everybody can contact that realm. So it's very vital to have that. We lost it, and now we are going to find that again, where old age is honored rather than looked down upon. So there's the grandmother, and I mentioned in the book, you have the grandmother of the Native American.
The First Nation.
In our civilization, you have the granny. They say the granny at best is cute.
Right.
But there's no depth to that,
right,
to how we perceive it.
Because we don't honor.
No. That dimension has virtually disappeared from our civilization, the dimension of depth, the dimension of spirit, the dimension of the sacred, which is so vital for human life.
And what kind of effect does that have on us, not honoring that, the age and that which is sacred within the age and the depth of that? What kind of effect does that have on us?
Well, it means the whole dimension of spirit, which is there, is lost. So we, all our life becomes completely superficial. Mm-hmm. And when life becomes completely superficial, you identify it with the surface movement of your life. And because of that lack of depth, people become very unhappy. Because there's only the surface of their life, possessions, achieving this or that, getting recognition.
And role-playing.
Role-playing.
And also
ego.
What you call on page 289, I like this, intelligent stupidity.
Yes.
Intelligent stupidity.
Yes.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, an example I give is, for example, you need great intelligence to split the atom. To do that, then what do we do with that? We make an atom bomb, a destructive weapon, out of something that could be a wonderful thing. So on the one hand, humans seem very intelligent, and then what they do with that intelligence very often is extremely stupid.
Right.
It becomes destructive.
Because that's where intelligent stupidity comes in.
Yes, and that's because the dimension of spirit is missing. Intelligence that is not connected to the deeper dimension of awareness or spirit, whatever you want to call it.
And being.
Yes, is very destructive.
Right.
Sooner or later, it becomes destructive.
Yes, I love what you say on page 290. This is, as you know, I've read the book now several times. That's why this should be your new summer read, everybody, because when you go back and read it again, you will find things that you didn't experience the first time.
Repeated readings, very helpful.
Or the second time.
Yes.
Or the third time. This is what I got the other just yesterday I was reading it once again, this chapter. Struggle or stress is a sign that the ego has returned, as are negative reactions when we encounter obstacles. So whenever you encounter obstacles in your life, it is because your ego is forefront. At the forefront?
Yes. It doesn't mean that you don't encounter challenges in your life, but to make them into, if you consider a challenge an obstacle that you need to fight against, that means the ego is there.
Right. This is 290. The force behind the ego's wanting creates enemies. That is to say, reaction in the form of an opposing force equal in intensity. That's what an enemy is. The stronger the ego, the stronger the sense of separateness between people. The only actions, this is one of my favorite quotes, I love this, the only actions that do not cause opposing reactions are those that are aimed at the good of all.
Yes. So you no longer separate yourself and say, this is my, you consider in whatever you do, you consider the totality or the whole, not just my little needs, but how do I fit into the totality? And so then, this is no longer karmic action which produces suffering.
Right. We're also learning that action, although necessary, is only a secondary factor in manifesting our external reality. The primary factor in creation is consciousness. No matter how active we are, I love this, how much effort we make, our state of consciousness creates our world. And if there's no change on that inner level, no amount of action will make any difference.
Yes. In other words, what you do is always secondary. Who you are is primary. And that means not who you are in the eyes of the world or who you are in the, whatever image you might have about yourself, but whether you are connected within yourself with that dimension of being spirit or consciousness.
You say it beautifully, 294. It's not what you do, but how you do what you do determines whether or not you are fulfilling your destiny.
Yes.
It's not what you do, but how you do it. And by that you mean the amount of presence or consciousness you bring to whatever you do.
Yes. Another aspect of that is whether whatever you are doing at any given moment, even the most, what the mind would say, insignificant thing, are you doing it in presence, or is it just a means to an end because you want to get to some future moment?
Right.
Just a simple example you could give. You can go to a restaurant, and the way in which the waiter puts the plate on your table can be present and conscious, and immediately you would be affected by that. When sometimes it happens that you have a waiter who is conscious,
and with
care and attention, he or she puts the table there, the plate in front of you.
Right.
And you can sense a very different energy from a waiter who is just doing his or her job.
Absolutely.
And he just puts it down.
And that's in every aspect. That's going through the toll booth, that's picking up your laundry.
Everything.
That's standing in line for French fries. That's everything.
Yes.
People either bring their presence or they don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
And often it's a useful thing to remember to check inside yourself to see whether you are making whatever you are doing at this moment, whether it is primarily a means to an end because you want to get somewhere else through what you are doing, or whether you're giving it your fullest attention.
I think you're going to have a generation of children growing up with unconscious parents, because I recognize this with myself. I've been guilty of it since the Blackberries.
Yes, yes.
If you're riding in a car with friends or you're any place with friends, everybody, instead of talking now, everybody's on their Blackberries to see who else is calling.
Yes, I've been wondering what they're doing when they go like that.
Oh, this is where everybody's writing everybody. You're right. Instead of talking to the people who are there with you, you're writing to the people who are not there to see what they have to say. That's what everybody's doing.
Oh, yes.
And many times people are now on their cell phones, or they're on their Blackberries, and their kids are coming into the room, and nobody ever even looks up.
And you're not experiencing reality that is around you. You're not experiencing the fullness of life around you, and what you are experiencing is a mental abstraction, which is little letters that you're putting in there. It's just mental abstraction. You're not even communicating truly with the person that you're sending the message to.
Yeah.
Because the communication is two or three times removed. You're just sending little ciphers to them.
Okay. Well, we're going to get into the three modalities of awakening, where you say that unless you are at any given time feeling, having acceptance, enjoyment, or enthusiasm for whatever you're doing, you should stop doing it.
Yes.
Because if you're not accepting the moment, enjoying the moment, or having enthusiasm for the moment, then you are in one way or another causing suffering.
Yes, it's a dysfunctional, you're in a dysfunctional state.
Mm-hmm.
You're not aligned with the present moment. You're not aligned with yourself. You're not aligned with life. Completely dysfunctional, and then you generate psychic disharmony around you. You make yourself unhappy. Already you're unhappy when
you can't accept the present moment.
And the unhappiness spreads, because when you're unhappy, others around you, you make them unhappy too. It spreads like a disease.
Well, I think, you know, as we here are already in Chapter 10, one of the biggest issues that I've heard so many people talk about, and last week a friend of mine started emailing me saying that how, you know, that she was following the classes and that it's very easy to have this resonate with you, but then when you have to go out into the world and actually deal with people,
mm-hmm.
that it starts to get difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that friend is Skyping us today, who is an actress who has played my daughter in the movie Beloved.
Oh.
Yes. She's my baby girl. Kimberly Elise played my baby girl. Hello, Kimberly.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. Who's been reading the book? Kimberly's been reading the book and following the webcast. And I was trying to email back and forth explaining this in email. And as Eckhart says, emails are, you know, not a full form of communication when you're trying to express these ideas. So go at it, Kimberly.
Okay. So, yes, as I was telling Oprah, it's been really exciting and enlightening to discuss in theory all the different concepts and ideas in the book. And it's been attainable here in this loving cocoon, which I live in and my book club members live in. But once you go out into the real world and have real life situations, you're presented with a lot of challenges because not everybody's read the book. Not everybody's on this journey. Not everybody is striving to evolve or have awareness. A simple example, one of the book club members works for a very egotistical boss and is very sort of pushed and has unrealistic demands put upon her. And she's managed to sort of pull herself above it, become witness to the ego she's dealing with and the ego within herself. And as a consequence, she's been perceived as sort of lax and dispassionate and disengaged in everything that's going around because everybody else is so in the drama, and she feels her job could be at stake because she's being viewed this way. That's an example. So my question is, if we're in the process of evolving our state of consciousness, moving away from our egos and getting closer to our true selves, how do we manage to maintain this level of elevation when you're forced in the real world to live and work with people who come from a strictly egotistical place and don't understand this awareness level and really can perceive you as being weak?
Good.
Good question. Good. Yes. Now let's hear what Eckhart has to say.
Okay.
So we are gradually learning to live from a different state of consciousness. Now, you cannot expect to be necessarily to be a master when you meet difficult people and already to be fully in that state of presence. It's a gradual process where you bring presence into your life. And as you invite presence into your life, and at first, don't even practice with the difficult boss, but leave him alone for a while. First, you invite presence into your life with small things. When you're at home, one little movement, making tea, opening the curtains as you get up, looking out of the window without any judgment, just perceiving the light, the clouds. Bring as much as possible presence into your life in simple situations. When you get into your car, you get in, close the door. Be quiet for 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Feel the inner body. Many opportunities are there whenever you're waiting. I talk about that in both books, I believe. Whenever you're waiting for something or someone, drop the waiting and be present. Be fully there, fully alert, fully accepting of that moment rather than wanting some other moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, and gradually you grow in presence power, or presence power grows in you. And when, as presence power grows in you, you can begin to apply it to slightly challenging situations, which normally would have triggered, for example, some slight irritation. Mm-hmm. And there you can observe, there's the old reaction, as you're waiting in line at the supermarket, and you can see the irritation with the cashier or the whoever is there in ahead of you, and you can immediately be aware of that and see, well, it has no useful function. It does nothing except make me unhappy, and you can then let go of it and be clear and free and present at that moment.
Yeah, I think too, Kim, that one of the things that we all want when you read this and you feel so great, it's like sort of being you know, when you feel so enthusiastic and you want everybody to get it as you get it, it's like developing spiritual muscle.
Yes.
It's like developing spiritual muscle. You can't go out and lift, you know, the 50-pound weight unless you have also lifted the 25-pound weight and the 10-pound weight. And so you have to start developing the muscle with things that you are more comfortable with. And the and once you've developed a strong enough muscle, the bosses become the unruly bosses become easier to handle. In the beginning, you just can't say, I'm going to go out, I'm going to apply this principle and expect it to work, because you have to have the inner strength in which to deal with it. And also, it comes from a greater awareness, I think, having had unruly bosses in my early years. It comes from a greater awareness of what your real purpose in life is. I remember being in Baltimore in the early days of my career, having a boss who was a complete jerk, who was just a complete jerk. I'd like to use another word for it, but I'll just leave
it. Of course, that's not his true self, but that's on
okay.
Heavy overlay.
Having a boss whose true self was loved and innocence and had a wonderful presence, but
heavy overlay.
Heavy overlay was the ego self that he showed daily was a complete jerk. Something inside me knew I wasn't going to be here forever, there forever. I knew that I could tolerate it, I could deal with it, I could handle it, I could... You know, my place in it was not, I knew he ultimately had no power over me, that I needed to do what was necessary for this particular time in my life. But inside myself, I knew trouble don't last always. And I will not, this is not going to be the course of my life.
This too will pass.
This too will pass. I knew that this too will pass. And so I could go into the space every day doing what needed to be done, as perhaps maybe your friend needs to do, doing what needs to be done, and could do the thing that everybody else couldn't understand. I could offer, give that person what they thought they needed. I could give them, I could create the space for them to be and even to show themselves, to be whoever their ego at that particular time, you know, wanted to be. You see what I'm saying?
I do. So as you're at that higher level of awareness, you're able to look at a situation and see it as just a situation, but not your entire life.
Not your entire life, because that person, ultimately, I knew, I'm going to be here for a time, I need to learn this much here, and then I'm going to be gone.
And do you believe that there are just some people in this lifetime who will not get to this level of awareness, and that you just really have to... focus on yourself.
Yeah, but that's what I said to you. That's what I was saying to you in the email. That's not your job to worry about what other people are going to do. Your only role is to be, is to concern yourself with yourself. Isn't
yes.
that true?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in one thing, as we said, and Oprah called it spiritual muscle.
Yeah.
And I called it growing in presence power. It's the same thing. So presence builds up gradually.
Right.
In the meantime, you can still practice even in difficult situations. It might sometimes work, even if your spiritual muscle is not yet highly developed. If you can remember just the little pointer, the little phrase, am I able to accept this moment as it is?
Mm-hmm.
And if this moment comes in the form of this obnoxious person,
mm-hmm.
Then the question is, can I accept this obnoxious person at this moment?
Can I accept this obnoxious person at this moment?
Because whatever arises in the present moment, can I be the space for this?
Yeah, and if you're able to remove your ego from it, if you're able to take your ego out of it,
yes.
then it becomes just what it is.
Yes.
What you were saying, Kim, it becomes just another situation. If you can take your ego out of it, or your friend take the ego out of it, so it's not personal.
No.
It's not personal at all.
No.
Yeah. That's what I learned how to do.
So we can really take these opportunities that are so challenging as little gifts and opportunities to grow ourselves.
Not only that, it is the true, that is the spiritual path. You know, we had talked at a previous class about how everybody has their cross to bear. And the truth is that when you confront an obnoxious boss or in difficult situations, therein lies your opportunity to build the spiritual muscle.
Yes.
To build this,
yes.
or create, or allow presence to come through in a way that you get to show who you are. instead of being worried about what the other person is doing.
Yes. So yeah. Difficult people or ego-controlled people have a very important spiritual function in this world. Eventually, they will become so unhappy that they will also go beyond that. But in the meantime, they are there for as practice material for others.
That's right, because if everything was wonderful all the time, you would have no practice, no way to practice.
There would be no growth.
Good way to look at it.
Hey, I love your house, Kim. I hadn't seen your new house. How nice.
Yeah, I know you haven't.
I know.
My dog.
Oh, my gosh. You have a dog and a fireplace? Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool, BG. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Very, very nice. Very interesting about the practicing of the spiritual muscle.
Yes.
Now, you notice when I was calling my former boss a jerk, and you said that's not who he is, do you never encounter obnoxious people in your life?
No, you do. I encounter obnoxious people. It's a question of looking...
Do you have only love for them?
Not necessarily.
Okay,
no.
Good.
No.
Okay. But it's a question of what, did you say?
Of whether one is able to look through this overlay of ego or heavy pain body, which can be very strong, whether you're able to go through that, and it's very hard to describe this process, when you are not judging the person mentally, not calling him or her anything, you still know that this person is obnoxious.
Yes.
You know that.
Yeah.
You know, still know that this person is controlled by the ego. You know it even
right.
Without formulating a concept in your
yeah.
mind. And so, but you also know that beyond there is there's a being
right.
that is pure and innocent and as close to God as anybody.
As anybody.
So
okay.
Is it possible to look through the ego in others?
Yeah, but Eckhart, you still don't have to want to deal with that person.
No. You may want to remove yourself and,
right.
yeah, and if that is possible, then that often is the best thing to
That's
do.
That's right, because you can still say, I can bless you in your beingness.
Yes. And
but what you're showing me now is not what I want to
no.
deal with.
Or you can walk out of a job if it's insane, the
right.
environment is insane. And the more present you are, the more certain you will be
about what to do.
What to do.
Absolutely.
But we talked about that in one of the sessions. The realization of what you have to do comes from a powerful but peaceful place
yes,
when you're present.
That's right.
So when you're walking out of the office, you're not walking out in anger when it comes through presence. You're walking out, you're peaceful with everybody and say, that's it, I'm walking out of here.
That's
There's
it.
Power, but no negativity.
Right, I got that.
So it's beautiful when that happens.
When to say, I have had enough.
Yes.
I have had enough. And that comes from your inner purpose
yes.
as opposed to your outer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, there may be other situations when you are forced, for some reason, you are forced into, now, an extreme example is that you're in an elevator and the elevator gets stuck.
Right.
And there you are with an obnoxious person mm-hmm. for 1 hour in the elevator. Mm-hmm. Or some people are stuck with somebody for some reason. They can't go, leave the situation. You're maybe in a prison
or
cell.
Or lots of people learn they have to keep jobs.
Yes.
Where they are dealing
yes.
with bosses who are obnoxious.
That's right.
Yeah, as we just heard Kimberly say.
Yes.
You have to keep a job. You have to earn a living for yourself and your family.
Yes. And there's a question of accepting that this is where this person is at. Without getting into reactivity.
And resisting it.
Resisting it.
Right.
Yeah.
I did it the right way because
yes.
I was in that situation for quite a long time
yes.
and literally would just accepted it. And I would have friends say, how can you put up with that? How can you tolerate that? Because I know this too shall pass.
And so
trouble doesn't last always.
Intuitively you did that.
Intuitively I
yes.
knew that I wasn't going to be there forever.
I remember the same reading your friend Maria Shriver wrote a book and she describes some of her early bosses. Dreadful.
Yes. Yes.
But somehow she was able to just say, that's how it is. She also knew she wasn't going to be there for the rest
of
her life.
Forever.
But for the time being, she kind of
this is what I need to
accept
do.
It and yes.
That's right. Kippy is an American who teaches gifted students at an elementary school on a U.S. Air Force base outside Tokyo, Japan, and she's Skyping us from her home office with a reading group she started after hearing about our web classes. Is it, how do you say hello in Japanese? Is it konnichiwa?
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. And mushy. The same to you.
Mushy, mushy.
Mushy, mushy.
On the telephone.
Hi, Kippy, let's start with you. What is your question?
Okay. Eckhart, on page 301, you wrote, enthusiasm means there is a deep enjoyment at what you do plus the added element of a goal or vision that you work toward. My question is how can we have goals or visions if we are to always remain in the present?
Good question.
Mm-hmm. Good, yes.
Good question.
Yes.
Thank you.
So the goal or vision, when it's is inside you as if it were already a reality, and in fact, on some level, it is a reality inside you already. So a goal that is powerful, when you're in touch with your own power, is not a goal that you project yourself mentally to and say, I would like to achieve this or that at some future point. I need that. I want that to complete myself. You're reaching out towards that goal. You're losing yourself. You're not present. But if you are, if you realize that whatever vision you hold is already a reality inside you. I give an example now of the power of now. Before I ever wrote the book, I had this vision of that that book was already, on some level, already there, had already been written. And so I felt all I'm doing is I'm externalizing what's already there. But I had this strong inner feeling that the book already exists inside me. Oh. I saw that it as a reality already. I didn't try to achieve writing a book. The book was already there, and all then I had to do was be open to this energy movement coming from within to manifest what was already there on a deeper level. And that's why Jesus said, whenever you ask for anything, believe that you already have received it and it will be yours. So if you believe that you already have received it, it means it must be already be a reality inside yourself, so you're not coming from lack or scarcity or neediness, because then you're not, there's no power behind your vision or your goal. Mm-hmm. You're already coming from fullness. So the goal is already a reality inside. You already feel as if you had it.
Right.
It's already a reality, and what you feel about it is the fullness that is already there in the present moment. And then you don't lose yourself, then you are fully there as you begin to respond to this inner impulse. You manifest it in your life, in the present moment. So it's not a future thing, really. A powerful goal, when you visualize, a powerful goal isn't, you're not visualizing in order to achieve something in the future. You're visualizing in order to bring something out that's already inside you.
Wow. That's powerful, but I can understand why a lot of people would be confused by it, because then how do you ever achieve anything in the future? Isn't that what you're saying too, Kippy?
Right. Right.
How do you ever achieve anything in the future? Say, I want to be an actress. There are a lot of people I know at the Bodhi Tree who we're going to, you know, talk to later. A lot of people at the Bodhi Tree who, you know, have day jobs, but what they really want, I want to be an actress. That's a future goal. I want to be an actor or an actress. Mm-hmm. Or I want to get a job working for, yes, you know, a major corporation.
Yes.
How do you, you know, how can you not hold that as a vision for yourself?
You can. But what you're visualizing is not yourself in some future state. The power that is there inside you that will manifest externally in time and in the future is already there. Get in touch with the power. What would it feel like if you were an actress already successful? What does that feel like inside you? And where does the power come from with which you can make a difference in people's lives, mm-hmm, when you are doing something like that? Where does the power reside?
Yeah, because you say instead of saying I want to be a great actress, is how do I use this talent to manifest in such a way that causes people to...
Yes.
Feel a certain way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's already a reality inside you, and then you can take steps towards implementing that. But it comes from fullness rather than neediness. The mistake is not finding the place of power that is in the present moment. Mm. And believing that something else that is not in the present moment is going to bring you to the place of power.
Okay.
It won't.
Okay. I just got it, Kippy. I just got it. I just got it. What he's saying is that whatever goal that you have or vision that you have must come from the place of being or consciousness. And if it comes from a place of being or consciousness and not is an external goal that you have for yourself, I think I'm getting it right, right? Mm-hmm. If it comes from being or consciousness, then it comes through you out into the world instead of you reaching out into the world saying, this is what I want for myself.
Yes.
And so all things, and I can use the example of myself, I have always wanted to do exactly what I'm doing here with all of you tonight. I've always felt that deep inside me, this is what I was meant to do. I was meant to be a teacher. I was meant to use television as a platform for helping people to better know themselves. knowing that deep inside myself is what has helped to bring this into fruition this way.
Yes.
Instead of saying, you know, one day I want to have a webcast and have a million people on the webcast.
Yes.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I do, yes.
That it comes from the inner part of you. There's a feeling that comes from the consciousness part of yourself, the being of yourself that says, this is what I now need to do. And that's why you're saying it doesn't matter what you do.
No.
It's how you do what you do. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what you do. Everything that you do has to be fueled by consciousness. Or the spirit of God, which is another way of saying it, mm-hmm. by consciousness or the spirit of God, otherwise it has no real meaning in your life.
Yes, and the place of power is in the present moment. That's the vital thing, is you can only touch that power in the present moment.
That's right.
So if you're not...
You said last week it's about this step. The step today that it takes to get to the next step, then the next step, and the next step, and the next step.
Yes.
You don't get there by thinking...
No.
Let me.
And even if you're doing something at the moment that life has given you that doesn't seem to be part of your vision. Let's say you are working in a restaurant, but your vision is being a great artist.
Right.
Or manifesting. You still need to honor whatever it is that you are doing at this moment fully and completely, because it may, in some way, it may arise out of that. That may also be part of it.
That's right. Because every step leads you to the direction. It's the means and not the end that
yes.
counts.
Yes.
The means and not the end.
Yes.
You follow that, right, Kip?
I do. Thank you.
Anybody else want to say anything there? Hi, ladies.
Hi.
What time is it in Tokyo right now? Is it another day already?
It's already, yes. Yeah. We are living on Tuesday morning.
Oh, Tuesday.
10:45.
Well, so in Tokyo, it's tomorrow. It's not the now.
So, just Tokyo. That card made it funny.
And you'll have beautiful weather tomorrow.
Okay. Tokyo, it's tomorrow. It's not now. All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Wow, that's interesting, because everything always comes back to that same point of whatever sense of presence or being, Holy Spirit, Spirit of God, whatever you choose to call it, name, because it doesn't have an ego,
mm-hmm.
so doesn't get hung up on what it's being called, that when you bring that into your life, it fuels everything that you do. And as you said last week, the evolutionary impulse of the universe rises up to meet you.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And so the question to ask yourself, it's a very simple question, am I okay with the present moment? You need to be deeply okay with the present moment to find the power of the present moment, which is your own power, or the power of the universe, or the mm-hmm. power of God.
Mm-hmm.
Am I okay? If you're not okay with the present moment, let's say you're working in a restaurant, but while you're working in the restaurant, you would rather be somewhere else. You're not empowered. You're only empowered that even while you're working in the restaurant, and for some people, it's their life purpose to work in a restaurant and to spread that presence through whatever they do in people they meet there, and that's beautiful.
And what you're saying in this book is that whatever you do, wherever you do, whatever you do, can have deep meaning and purpose to it and for the rest of the world if you bring your presence to it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And we all have encountered that, the difference between people, whether it's a waiter or the toll booth operator or, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Enormous.
In every one of our life circumstances. Okay. Elzbieta is joining us from Poland. Did I pronounce your name correctly tonight?
Very well. Yes. Elzbieta. Hello.
Elzbieta, where she's been downloading all of the webcasts. Hello? Is it Dzień Dobry? Hello?
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Oh, fantastic. I want to thank you both for this extraordinary webcast, the greatest book club I've ever seen.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
What's your question?
I'd like to ask Eckhart to comment on a certain quote from a philosopher, Alan Watts. If I may?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Later I will also have a question, if possible.
Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
There is a certain pause. That's why it's a little strange. So the quote is from the book on the taboo against knowing who you are. The most strongly enforced of all known taboos is the taboo against knowing who or what you really are, behind the mask of your apparently separate, independent, and isolated ego. Could you please comment on that?
Well, the taboo is not a taboo that's... it's not called a taboo, but our civilization is ignorant of that dimension. And our civilization, to a large extent, is still run by the ego. And the ego does not want to know about the deeper dimension of spirit. It feels threatened by that. The ego likes perhaps to have an ideology and call that spiritual. It has a certain rigid belief system and says that is spiritual and identifies with that and calls other people enemies or evil who don't agree with that belief system. But so the ego feels threatened by the spiritual dimension within the human being. And it will do unconsciously anything to sabotage the arising of the spiritual dimension in our culture, in civilization, or in human beings. And so you see, these are unconscious reactions. Some people say that what we are doing is evil. These are unconscious reactions, again, by the ego to protect itself.
Wow. You mean some people say what we're doing here is evil?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't know how it is possible, because bringing people to greater presence and to peaceful way to live, how that can be evil, I don't know. But somehow they work it out in their minds.
That this is evil.
Yeah. And so this is it's an unspoken taboo. There are no laws against spirituality, but the taboo is unspoken. It's underneath the surface of things. And the taboo has been created by the egoic civilization that we inhabit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, that's very clear to me too, but I think that even though Alan Watts wrote it, 30, 40 years ago, it still rings true, unfortunately. So my question actually is, for those who misinterpret your teachings, could you clarify, do you consider your teachings to be a religion?
Certainly not. It's not a religion. It is spiritual, which means this teaching, the truth of it, can be applied within any religion or within no religion. The teaching is in essence spiritual. It's not based on belief systems. It's not based on thoughts. It's based on becoming present and still. And whether you are a Muslim or a Christian or a Buddhist, or
atheist,
it can be applied in your life. The transformation of consciousness does not depend on your belief system. But it is possible, of course, if you have a rigid belief system, it can stop you from the the belief system can sabotage the transformation, but it does not depend. The transformation does not depend on whatever belief system you have. Certain belief systems are so rigid that they represent a barrier.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to those people, though? I mean, I think that was one of the questions that somebody has tonight about other people who think that what you have written and what we have done here in communicating with people around the world about what you've written is evil. What do you say to that?
Well, probably most of them have never looked at the book.
Right.
And many of them probably have never listened into the webcast.
Right. Right.
So, because if they truly read a few pages in the book, they would see that there's absolutely nothing that could be interpreted as evil.
As evil. Thank you, Elzbieta. Thank you so much.
I agree, absolutely. Oprah, can I also share one aha moment?
Just sure, the please. Last thing? Show an aha. Share an aha.
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
That would go back to the first chapter on page 12, where Eckhart writes about fear, greed, or the desire for power are not the dysfunction, but are created by the dysfunction, which is a deep-seated collective delusion that lies within the mind of each human being. End of quote. I think that this is there's lots of great stuff in the book, and there is an aha almost on every page, but this one is very important, I think, because it seems to me seeing through the delusion can only, when we can see through the delusion, can we be really free of fear, greed, and desire for power, which we all share, I'm afraid.
Thank you, Elzbieta. Thank you for sharing that all the way from Poland tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Beth from Green Bay, Wisconsin, sent in an email that caught my attention a few weeks back. I thought it would be great to Skype with her for this last chapter. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Oprah.
Hi.
Hi.
Why don't you read us your email?
Yeah.
Okay. I emailed in. I've been working on This Too Shall Pass. And I've noticed it's much easier to accept that this is my own life situation than it is for the world's life situation. For example, I can't be cavalier about teenagers beating each other for video content on the internet. I can't condone 13-year-old girls having spiritual weddings to much older men. And I cannot just accept that human beings will be tortured and killed for having a different religion, nationality, or skin color. Why is it so much easier to say that's no big deal for me than it is for the rest of the world? Why can't I let go of this global anger?
You have global anger. Well,
that's a good word.
That's a good word for it. But
many people have that.
I was going to say, you can be angry for a very long time if you're going to carry that around. But go ahead.
So have you already dropped anger on a personal level in your own life, being angry at people around you that you experience personally?
Very rarely do I get angry at anyone else anymore. Mostly it's my kids, but that's just part of their growing up. I've been able to see that why they're doing what they're doing and have some compassion for them. It's just on a larger scale. Okay.
Yes, compassion. Yeah. There's an important word. Mm-hmm. I also noticed in your question you used the word condone, which perhaps may be synonymous in your mind with acceptance. Mm-hmm. Condone means to say it's okay to behave in such a way. Then this is not what acceptance is about. Acceptance is to simply see what is and to say this is what is right now. This is how these humans behave. This is what they're doing right now. This is what is. And no matter what you think or how you judge that, you cannot argue with the fact that this is what is. And that's all acceptance is. It doesn't mean it's okay, I condone it, there's nothing wrong with it. It's to come to an inner acceptance of the isness of life right now. And then you can look, and then you can see, once you have come to an acceptance of what is, you also see that, yes, it is mad. You can see it is mad. You can come to a place of compassion when you see that all these people are unconscious. They don't know what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you can see evil, I mean, there's vast amounts of evil still happening on the planet, which means suffering that humans inflicting on other humans, on other life forms, on the planet itself, on nature. All that you can see as manifestations of ignorance, spiritual ignorance, unconsciousness, mm-hmm. ego, collective ego. And so once you see that, you can come to a place of compassion for those people who are still controlled by ego and who are acting unconsciously.
And also, doesn't it come to that phrase about accepting the things you cannot change, changing the things you can, and having the wisdom to know the difference? And the truth of everything that we've been saying in these past 2 weeks, Beth, for you and everyone else, is that you begin to change the world by first changing yourself. And so the anger, all of us are putting energy into the world. All of us are putting energy out into the world. And you raise the level of consciousness when you bring consciousness and presence to whatever it is you do. That's how you begin to change the world. In your home right now, what room are you in right now?
This is a spare bedroom. We call it the home office.
Okay. In your home office, with your children, in your actions every day, being less angry in your personal life really helps diffuse it in the rest of the world.
Yes.
And people don't see that as a big deal, but if everybody did that, it would be diminished.
Yes. You are connected on an unseen level with all other humans.
That's right.
And whatever energy you put out contributes to that particular vibration in the collective energy field of humanity.
Correct.
So if you're putting out anger, then that connects with all the collective anger that is floating on the ground on the planet, which is vast.
Uh-huh.
It connects and feeds the collective anger.
Yes. And so isn't it for each of us, we're asked to do that which we can do? I mean, I feel this every time I go to Africa, that it's really easy to get overwhelmed by all of the massive problems, you know, encountered in that country. You can get easily overwhelmed. And so the thing to do is to focus on that which you can change, that which you can have some impact on, and do that as well as you can.
Yes.
Yeah.
One little thing, perhaps. One thing that might seem insignificant, and you mm-hmm. can make a change there.
But everything is significant depending on what
That's
presence
right.
you bring to
yes.
it.
Yes.
Beth, I hear you've made some big changes since reading A New Earth. Tell us about them.
Oh, yes. Actually, I picked up A New Earth after my grandmother passed away in January. But some things have been happening along the line that I didn't really understand what was going on. I left a job that was not good for me in November. I was able to spend more time with my grandmother, and we both prepared ourselves for her passing. I've quit smoking. I've started running. I eat healthy foods. I'm not even sure who I am anymore.
And that's a good thing.
Yes.
That's a good thing. But I think the key word here is what Eckhart had said earlier. Accepting what is going on in the world isn't the same thing as condoning it, because there are a lot of terrible things going on in the world. And
no, I know, and I don't know if it's because I've been a mom for so long. It's just I want to put myself maybe as a shield in front of these people to offer them some protection. And I don't know if that's my own ego, but it doesn't feel like it's my ego. It's like, you know, you people don't deserve this. Mm. You deserve to have a better life. You're 13, 14 years old. It's not time for you to have a baby.
Are you talking about the polygamous story on the news?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's none of your business right now. Your business is what's going on in your house right now, Beth.
Yeah, and I'm happy to hear Eckhart says that grandmothers are going to be respected, because I'm going to be a grandmother in July.
Oh. Well, I don't know if they'll be respected by July, but we're working on it. We're working on it, okay? Thanks for that email. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we got some work to do. We're going to get...
maybe just want to...
We're going to get old age respected by July. We got to get busy. We got to sell some more books. Thanks, Beth. We have a caller from France on the line. Michelle lives in Paris, has a question.
Yes, hello, Oprah and Eckhart.
Hello. C'est bonjour, bonsoir.
I actually have a million questions, but I'm only going to ask one.
Okay.
One that's actually troubled me for a long time, and I think I can sum it up with a quote from the Bible. It is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. And for me, I see the rich man as someone who is full of ego and full of mind, which can never enter into consciousness. And this relates to me and to my question, because I have a very strong and active mind, and it's my greatest asset, perhaps, but it's also my Achilles heel. And when I can reach a place of stillness or awakening, my mind wants to participate. It wants to own the experience. And at some point, always succeeds in bringing form to the experience, turning it into a concept, trying to understand it, trying to link it with past experiences. And so you speak about this space between ego and awareness, and I need to develop that space. I need to be able to step further back from my mind. And it's very difficult. The mind's also very cunning, and it deceives me even into believing that I'm actually in that space. What can I do? How can I work on this, this dilemma?
Well, the mind cannot recognize that space. It doesn't know anything about it. It's completely meaningless to the mind. But from what you are saying, I can see that you already are able to enter that space. For how long doesn't matter, but you are already able to have that inner space of stillness inside you, and your mind is almost denying that experience, certainly resisting it.
Mm.
So, first of all, it's the recognition that the most important thing, which is the initial disidentification from the process of thinking, has already happened inside you. That first disidentification from thinking and encountering that dimension of presence or stillness inside yourself, that has already happened. Now, the mind is not happy with it. It doesn't want to go there, or it judges it in some way, or the mind says, oh, I want to interpret it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to be there is, rather than fighting the mind or your thought processes, to recognize thoughts that arise as thoughts. And it's from the place of stillness or spaciousness inside you that you can recognize when thoughts come and say this or that about stillness or about whatever you should be doing, something else or whatever they say. You recognize these as just another thought and another thought. And when you recognize a thought as a thought, it no longer has this power to pull your attention in completely.
Right.
And so the important thing is not the fact that your mind is highly developed. That can be quite useful at some point when you're not identified with it. You can use your highly developed mind in the service of awareness, in the service of spirit, and that's fine. But in the meantime, it's not being drawn into every thought that arises, or even fighting a thought and saying, go away, I want to be still. That doesn't work either. You recognize...
Seeing it as a threat, I'm giving it power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes. So you recognize the mind as mind. You recognize thinking as thinking. So you can then choose to be present when you're walking out in nature, for example,
mm-hmm.
or when you're sitting alone in your room. You choose to be present, and then you will notice the mind will occasionally try to come in and do or say something about it, or something totally different, or says you should be thinking about something else that's more important than this. And then you can recognize these thoughts as just another thought that arises. You can even say to yourself, oh, there's another thought, and then you get still again. And then the thought comes, oh, there comes another. Not to give every thought that arises this importance. so that it draws you in, because the mind wants to do that. It wants all your attention, because it's had all your attention for such a long time. So it's a habit pattern of the mind. It wants to draw in your attention. And all you do is you take your attention out of the mind. So that's the really is the process. Thoughts is, the mind is not the enemy. You would never win that fight against the mind if you made the mind into an enemy. The mind is like a little restless child, you could say, or a restless puppy. Mm-hmm. It goes about, and then you say, oh, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, and as we all get, build our spiritual muscle here, we become more and more conscious of our consciousness and recognize when the thoughts are just playing in your mind. And I'm sure that started to happen to you already, Michelle. You just said, oh, there's a thought, there's another one, there's another thought. I would have to say over the 10 weeks that we've been doing this course, I've become really, really more skilled at, I will think about that later, sort of like Scarlett O'Hara. I won't think about that now. I'll think about that later, because this is now, I want to be present with whatever is going on in this moment, so I'll deal with that at a later time when I choose to set aside time for thinking about that particular thing, instead of just letting my thoughts rule everything all the time.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I've been putting much too much effort into keeping my thoughts at bay.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Looking at them for what they are.
Just looking to go, oh, there's another thought. There it is again. And then the effort should be in keeping yourself in the moment of what it be. You know, my mantra is be here, be now. Be here, be now, with whatever's going on.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's good.
Be here, be now.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Thank you.
Bonsoir.
Thank you. Bonsoir.
All right. Let's talk about, you say that the alignment of your outer purpose with your inner purpose is what we talked about last week. The inner purpose must fuel the outer purpose. Otherwise, ultimately, it's not going to work for us. But the alignment of our outer purpose with the inner purpose is called awakened doing, and that awakened doing is the next stage in the evolution of consciousness on our planet. There are three modalities of awakened doing: acceptance, enjoyment, and enthusiasm. On page 295, you write, each modality represents a certain vibrational frequency of consciousness. That is, you need to be vigilant to make sure that one of them operates whenever you are engaged in doing anything at all. This is key, folks. From the most simple task to the most complex, if you are not in a state of either acceptance, enjoyment, or enthusiasm, look closely and you will find that you are creating suffering for yourself and others. So let's explain each one of them. You touched on it a little bit earlier when you were talking to Kippy, I think, about acceptance does not, no, that was Beth. That acceptance does not mean condonement. It means I accept this moment for what it is.
Yes. And so when you're doing something, you'll be amazed if you become aware of this and observe people around you, how many people are constantly in a state of disharmony because they cannot be in either acceptance, enjoyment, or enthusiasm about what they're doing.
You use the example in the book of changing the flat tire. Now, you don't have to enjoy changing the flat tire. That you would have reached another level of consciousness
when
you can enjoy changing it.
Yes.
Which I'm sure you could. You maybe could change it with enthusiasm.
I'll let you know when it happens.
Okay. But so you don't have to enjoy changing the flat tire, but at least to accept the tire is flat. You will have a much better experience rather than cursing the fact that you've had a flat tire, which is what most people do.
Yes.
The first time you get the flat tire, everybody goes, damn.
Yes.
Flat tire.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
And even more so if it's at night in the pouring rain and
that's
it's
right.
cold.
It's never convenient.
No.
Yeah.
So the question then is you have to check inside to see what is your inner state of consciousness that you're bringing to this action, to whatever you are doing. What is this inner state of consciousness? What state am I in? And then often you will realize that you are in a state of denial of the present moment.
Okay. So you said acceptance, you just said this to Beth, is just saying what is.
Is, and if this is what I have to do at this moment, then I might as well do it without resistance.
And that is the same as if it's a flat tire, or if it is, as my friend Kimberly was saying earlier, with the girl and her boss.
Yes.
My boss is obnoxious.
Yes.
That is what is.
Yes.
I'm not going to change that. So let me figure out how to deal with that.
Yes. Yeah. And the acceptance really needs to be applied only to the present moment. If the boss is there, sitting there, saying whatever he says.
Right.
At this moment, am I able to accept this? Am I bringing acceptance to this?
That's
now,
right.
Here we are talking more specifically about when you're performing some kind of action.
Right.
And what is the question is, what energy flows into the doing?
That's right. That's the question.
Is it the energy of denial or negativity? And once you are, you have developed a little bit of sensitivity, you can very easily tell by observing other people whether the energy that flows into what they do is contaminated with negativity, or whether it's presence or consciousness
yeah.
that flows.
And yeah.
Totally qualitative difference is enormous. I mentioned the waiter as an example. How does he put the plate on the table? Is he just doing a job because he wants to get out of there as soon
yeah.
as possible and just making a living? Or is he honoring this moment? And by honoring this moment, he's honoring you. He's honoring life. And something flows into the simple movement of putting a plate on the table, just as one simple example.
Right.
That changes the entire environment around him, too.
Yeah. I had this experience this weekend. I had to go somewhere and had to do something, and I was very upset with myself because I hadn't handled my schedule better. So I had to fly into New York, and then my schedule started at like 8 o'clock in the morning. I was very upset that I hadn't given more time for myself because I was already exhausted. And I realized that I had to change my attitude, change the frequency. Otherwise, I was going to affect the outcome
yes.
of everything I was doing that day
yes.
if I couldn't have a shift
yes.
in my own perception about the day. So I really literally went and sat with myself in the closet until I could shift my attitude into, well, I must accept the fact that I didn't look out for myself. I didn't prepare better. My schedule is now overcrowded. That's the way it is. How can I move forward and make the best of it?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I was making myself angrier
yes.
and, you know, looking for who I could blame.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you hadn't done this, the energy of...
I realized I was going to ruin my whole day.
Yes. And it
and everybody I encountered was going to feel that.
And everybody that you... Everything that you would have done would have not truly been successful, because success depends on what energy flows into what you do.
Okay.
And you affect everybody else also with that.
And that is why you must change the modality to, if you're not accepting, enjoying, or enthusiastic, you need to stop whatever that is and work on changing your mood, or don't do it.
Yes. Either accept what you do, which is the primary thing, or don't do it. Remove yourself. Don't do it. But don't contribute negative energy or suffering to this world.
I know, but most people are going to say, I'm sure listening, saying, but I had to do it. I had to do it. I have a responsibility. I have to do it, but I don't want to do it.
Well, then know that at that moment, it is your choice to create unhappiness for yourself and others. Once you know that that is your choice, it might change.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really to generate unhappiness for yourself and by implication for others really requires you to be unconscious.
Right.
But when you make this process conscious and realize at this moment, by resisting what I'm doing, I'm creating suffering for myself.
Yes.
And probably people around me too.
Okay. And the reason you come into acceptance again is because of the energy that you're bringing into it. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the next modality for awakening is enjoyment.
Yes. No.
That's a notch above acceptance.
Yes. Different frequency.
Vibrational frequency. Because everything is about vibrational frequency.
Yes.
People are bringing energy to everything that they do.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, enjoyment is a higher frequency.
Right.
Some things are easier, of course, to do in the state of enjoyment. One might almost say you do them naturally in a state of enjoyment, things that you like doing.
Yeah. I love this quote, Eckhart. On 297, you say, on the new earth, enjoyment will replace wanting as the motivating power behind people's actions.
Yes.
When's that going to happen?
Well, it has
not,
to...
Not by July either, I don't think.
Well, not in the collective, but, yeah. But it can happen in the individual already now.
Where we do things because we enjoy them.
Yes.
And not because you want more and want more and want more.
Yes.
Because so many people have expressed throughout this class on the message boards and in other areas how you get more things and get more things and you want more things and want more things, and that leaves you with an empty space.
Yes, trying to fill your life up with things. Eventually, you come to an empty space, and you feel
nothing,
completely unfulfilled.
Right.
And so the wanting is the usual thing that comes out of the egoic state of scarcity or lack, which
right.
is always there when the ego predominates.
Yeah.
So I need that in order to fulfill myself, in order to find satisfaction. I need to achieve this in order to be fully myself. This is the underlying assumption.
Right, of wanting.
And that is the old energy of wanting. So you go out and it becomes very stressful because you're trying to arrive at that point.
Yes.
Always trying to get away from this moment because the next one promises greater fulfillment.
Yes.
The next one never comes because when it comes, it's the now again, which is a place you want to get away from.
Mm-hmm.
Completely insane,
right.
But normal.
Okay. So getting to the place where you can have enjoyment from things, because enjoyment does what?
Enjoyment brings an enormous empowerment to what you do, and it flows into what you do, and this is the beginning of creativity, which comes
right.
out of that.
When the creative power of the universe becomes conscious of itself, it manifests as joy. You don't have to wait for something meaningful to come into your life so that you can finally enjoy what you do. There's more meaning in joy than you will ever need. The waiting to start living syndrome is one of the most common delusions of the unconscious state.
That's important, because many people are trapped in that delusion. They are waiting for something to come into their lives which will finally give them joy or sense of aliveness.
Okay, I love this. 298, everybody. Joy does not come from what you do. It flows into what you do, and thus into this world from deep within you. The misperception that joy comes from what you do is normal and is always dangerous, because it creates the belief that joy is something that can be derived from something else, such as an activity or thing. Don't people do things that bring them joy?
That's what it looks like, but it's the same process that we talked about a little earlier when we talked about manifesting something from within.
The joy is there.
It comes from the fullness of life that you already sense within you at this moment.
Okay, so for example, I have really enjoyed these webcasts.
Yes.
I've really enjoyed doing these webcasts.
Where does the enjoyment come from? From within you. It doesn't come from this table or these lights or the cameras or even...
Doesn't it come from the community of people out there? I've really enjoyed having all these people join us.
But the joy is within you. And then it flows out. It reaches everybody. Even through the cameras, it can reach people and trigger joy in others.
Can you all feel my joy?
Yes, but only within them. So it's their own joy. When they feel your joy, they feel their joy, because that's all. It's one.
Oh, so they're not feeling my joy?
No, there's no such thing as my joy, ultimately.
Oh, that's
right.
There's
only joy.
It's only our joy.
Yes, you could say that.
There's our collective joy.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
All
so
right.
You see that?
Okay, that is exactly what I'm doing. The misperception that joy comes from what you do is normal, also dangerous, creates a belief that joy is something that can be derived from something else. You then look to the world to bring you joy, to bring you happiness, but it cannot do that. That is why people live in constant frustration. You will only, because the world's not giving them what they think they need. You will only enjoy any activity in which you are fully present, any activity that is not just a means to an end. It isn't the action you perform that you really enjoy, but the deep sense of aliveness that flows into it. That aliveness is one with who you are. I got that.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm sure many people touch that place within as they watch this webcast. They watch you talking, they watch me talking. Suddenly they feel that intense sense of aliveness within.
But is that enjoyment the same as pleasure?
No.
It's not. I asked that question of myself yesterday.
Pleasure comes from something without outside of you.
Okay.
So you derive pleasure from something outside of you.
And I ask that because you say this means that when you enjoy doing something, you're really experiencing the joy of being in its dynamic aspect. That's why anything you enjoy doing connects you with the power behind all creation.
Yes.
Now, see, I read that and I thought, what about people who enjoy gambling or enjoy...
These are pleasures.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sex or enjoy being sadistic or enjoy harming other people.
Yes, or enjoy
the
things
power
that...
The creation isn't behind that.
We sometimes call that enjoy, but there is no true joy in it.
Okay.
It's being addicted to a pleasure, something outside that feeds the ego or the pain body.
And pleasure, by the definition, means pleasing me.
Yes.
Which would be ego.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, let's go to our New Earth study group that has gathered every week for the past 10 weeks at Borders on Michigan. Hi, everybody in Chicago. We got a warm day in Chicago. Aren't we happy? I know. I know people are out on the beach, 68 degrees.
Yes.
Put our shorts on. It's 68 degrees here. Thank you so much for your enthusiasm and participation. We talked to Sharon during one of our classes. I think it was around the second web class. And Sharon's standing by now. Here, you're going to be making some big changes?
Yes, I am.
What happened?
Well, just like Eckhart was drawn to California to write Power of Now, I went on idealist.org and just decided to volunteer, and someone responded back to me. And it's in The Hague in Netherlands. The thing is I have to do it. Everything has lined up, and I'm just drawn to do this. I have student loans because I have 2 graduate degrees, but yet I have all the money I need to do this. I have the support of my support system here. Through conversations I've had with different members of this book club, I realized, gosh, you know what? I really want to do this. I absolutely want to do this. And when I'm not in a space of acceptance, I get scared and I say, this does not make sense. Why am I doing this? I flew to Holland 2 weeks ago. I've been back a week. And I interviewed with the gentleman I'm going to be working with. He is an academic. It's an NGO. And I connect with him. I love what I'm actually doing research now that I'm back. I'm going back. I got an apartment. I'm going to be there for some months, you know, maybe longer. And because I feel drawn to do this, and I feel encouraged to do this, and things have just unfolded where I can absolutely afford to do this.
Then it's all lined up.
I was downsized.
It's all lined up.
Everything's lined up, and I'm shocked by that. I absolutely, when I think consciously of it, Oprah, I don't know, this is not my life. This never has happened to me before. But whenever I go still, by the way, there was a Nick at the Bodhi tree.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in my room in Holland crying. The entire week I hadn't been able to use my computer because of course I used it first day and I ran out of my battery died on me. And downstairs I troubleshooted with the
Why were you crying over Nick?
Because he was talking about what I was feeling. And
worried about your bills?
I need to be earning, I said.
Yeah, that was a powerful thing that Nick said, because I think everybody's touched by that. I mean, anytime, ever since that Nick comment 2 weeks ago, what Eckhart said to Nick about worrying, I haven't had a worry since. I thought, well, I can think about it. I can choose to do something about it, but I don't have to worry about it. I thought that was really powerful for all of us. Really powerful.
Yes.
It was powerful.
So now you're in a situation, Sharon. Don't question things lining up, because that is what is supposed to be happening. And
right.
that is,
right.
I will say to everybody who is listening to us today. That is what happens when you become more conscious. You are aware enough to see things line up. Because when you move through the world unconsciously, you can't even see it line up. You're not available to be a witness to the alignment. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you become more awakened, and the more awakened you become, the more things line up. And you end up moving with the flow of your life.
Right. But here's what's exciting. When I sit and I'm quiet.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, so I was crying and I was able to watch it because I was able to borrow a plug from somebody else in the hotel.
That was alignment right there.
So it worked.
Yeah.
Again, it lined up. So it was great. So I'm sitting on the bed and I'm crying. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? Then I'm watching Nick talk. I'm dying of laughter, of course. And I'm sure they heard me in the next rooms. But I said, wow, this is fantastic. What's really neat is I after it was over, I shut down the computer and I sat and I said, okay, let's be still. You feel kind of strange about this. You don't feel you deserve this right now. That's really what it was. And I sat for a while and I said, okay, let me just sit with this. If this is what I feel, will it kill me if I don't feel great right now? After that, I stayed up all night and I just smiled. The sunset, you know, the sun came up. I packed slowly. I felt joy. And I have felt joy since coming back, except for driving in to this last of our meetings, because I'm going to miss everyone. And I realize also I'm letting go of something is over now for me. I'm not going to be going back into finance. I know that.
Yeah.
And
well, I want everybody.
Whatever.
Well, thank you so much, Sharon, for sharing.
I appreciate it.
Sharon. Thank you. And
thank
everybody
you.
At the Borders for your commitment to this work and our web series. Borders, give yourselves a round of applause there. All our Borders buddies.
Oh, can I say one last thing, Oprah?
Yeah.
Can I say one last thing? This, by the way, this group of people, I so love them. I'm going around saying to everybody, I love you. I love you. This has been the best group. I'm taking classes. Some people here teach, and I'm taking classes with them. I've spoken to other people and learned so much about not just myself, but about the world, and I feel so joined with everyone. This has been just the best experience for me, and thank you so much for it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you again.
Thank you,
our Borders buddy. Isn't that the whole point of all of this, is that when you become more awakened, everybody, things begin to flow in your life in a way that they had not before.
Yes.
And that's what's supposed to be happening.
Yes.
These, you know, you talk in the book about, you know, serendipitous encounters. I don't think you use the word, but things just start mm-hmm. happening.
Mm-hmm.
They line up.
Yes. Yes. You have to be there for this to happen. If you're not there, you have to be there in the now so that life can work for you.
Uh-huh.
You can't, if you deny life by denying the now, life can't work. It's like closing the shutters. The sun can't come in.
Yeah.
The sun doesn't mind, but the sun, why not open the shutters and let the sun shine in? Which is, the strange thing is that it's when you no longer deny the present moment, then not only do you see all the things that are lining up there to support you, it also means more things are coming into your life.
Absolutely.
To be of assistance.
Absolutely.
And so that's wonderful once you...
The evolutionary impulse of the universe.
Yes, yes.
Rises up to me.
Yes.
It does.
It does not mean that you will never again encounter challenges.
Right.
Or if you want to have a certain course of action, you want to go from here to there, always, of course, being conscious that the step you're taking at this moment is the most important step, but you might still want to go from here to there.
But it does reduce the fear.
Oh, yes.
It does reduce the fear.
Yes.
Because you know you can always bring your sense of presence to the whatever the moment is.
Yes.
And that you'll be all right.
Yes.
That's right.
And as soon as you encounter a challenge, not resist it, but immediately come to an acceptance of the new situation and then see how that, very often it turns around and becomes actually helpful.
Yes.
In the same way that a martial arts master always uses the opposing energy, The martial arts master does not fight against. He uses the opponent's energy and gives into it. Mm-hmm. And he wins by yielding to the oncoming energy.
Knowing how to surrender to the oncoming energy.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. A question that we get asked all the time is, how old is Eckhart? How old are you?
This body is 60 years old.
Wow. And why did you say this body?
Well, I don't feel that I am this age. I mean, if you look within, nobody feels that. It's only if you identify with the body that you believe that you are a certain age. Mm-hmm. The consciousness that I am is ageless. The consciousness that you are is ageless. And you, I'm sure you also feel that there's inside you a consciousness which has nothing to do with the age of
That's
the physical
right.
body.
Mm-hmm. Do you do something for your skin? No, these are all the questions that we have to ask of the 10th lesson, because people write in and they say that Eckhart has such glowy skin. Is there something you do especially for your skin, Eckhart?
Well, one confession I need to make here is, well, my skin is usually fine. I'm happy with my skin. But here,
yes,
we have a very good makeup artist who does something to my skin before I come out here.
Really?
Yeah, Stella.
Stella does. So you were wearing like a little powder or something?
No, whatever.
Whatever. But it's
my,
so smooth.
My skin is fine. I mean, it's I'm happy with it. And if you don't accumulate a lot of past inside, then the aging process slows down quite a bit.
Really? Say that again.
If you do not accumulate a lot of past inside your psyche by hanging on to past, identifying with my past, deriving your sense of self from past, talking about the past, thinking about the past, then you carry this burden of past. But if you let go of that past and focus primarily on present moment, then the aging process, I believe that, and I've seen it in some people who are present, the aging process of the body actually slows down considerably.
Wow. So 60.
Yeah.
Your body is 60 years old. Yeah. Don't look it. You don't do anything like color your hair or anything?
No.
You don't?
No.
Okay. No Botox? Okay. Yeah. Wouldn't we be just a little disappointed to find out Eckhart, Mr. No Ego, is Botox?
What is that?
What is Botox? Yeah. Never mind. It's too hard to explain what it is. What is that? Can't even explain it. Now let's go to Denise, who's Skyping us from her home office in Seattle, Washington. Denise has a question that a lot of viewers have also asked. Denise, go ahead.
Hi, Oprah. Hi, Eckhart.
Hello. Hi.
When I go to bed and I'm feeling conscious and aware, why then do I still have nightmares? And do I have an ego while I'm sleeping?
Good question.
Well, some dreams are dreams that process things that haven't been faced completely during the day. Mm-hmm. So many kinds of dreams are processing dreams. Mm-hmm. And then there are other dreams that bring up different energies. There can be pain body coming into a dream. Ego can come into the dream because normally in a dream you're not conscious that you are dreaming. In exceptional circumstances, you may be. I don't know whether you're ever conscious in the dream that you are dreaming. Are you?
I can't remember.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
So it is quite possible sometimes for the pain body to come up in a dream, and the character that you represent in the dream is most likely an aspect of your ego. Ego, in a dream, of course, you're completely identified with what's happening in the dream, and there is usually, and this is why I asked you this question, there's usually an absence of the aware space, where you are aware that you are a character in the dream. And usually, so you can have the awareness in your daily life here, this is what this is all about, is to live in a way so that you have a dimension in your life that so in the background of your life, there's always the aware presence. From there, you are conscious of whatever you are doing, whatever your mind is saying. In a dream, that's missing. You don't have the level of awareness.
Awareness. unless you're conscious in the dream, which I dream dreams and I'm conscious in the dream.
Yes.
And I can say, I can be in a dream and then say, oh, I'm dreaming now.
Yes.
And if it's not a dream I want to be in, I'll say, got to get out of here.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you could say in a dream, okay, I'm dreaming, I can do anything.
Yeah, I can do anything. I think I'll fly now. But you don't do that in your dreams, right? So the question is whether or not your dreams are your ego. Sometimes they are not. Did you not also say, well, you did say in the book that sometimes when we dream, we go back to source.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, there I talk about dreamless sleep.
Yes.
Because, as you know, when you sleep, you have the dream stage, which
right.
you go in and out of periodically, and then occasionally you have the deep sleep state of dreamless
yeah.
sleep.
You say that on 282. I read that earlier. Each night without knowing it, you return to the unmanifested source of all life when you enter the stage of deep dreamless sleep
yes.
and then reemerge again in the morning, replenish. So you've gone back to source energy
yes.
there.
Yes, yes, yeah. yes. That's so it does help. What do you do before going to sleep? Is there when you, the last, let's say the last 20 minutes or so? What
You're not watching the news, are you?
No, I'm reading the New Earth. And so.
Okay.
Okay, but even that.
I'm feeling.
That's good, but even that, I would put it aside just for some minutes before you actually go to sleep so that there can be a space inside you rather than words. And some of the words may actually help you get in touch with that space. But then a time comes when you put the book aside, and the best, the most powerful, the most helpful way of going into sleep is by lying on your back flat,
mm-hmm.
arms stretched out, and put attention into the inner energy field of your body and feel the aliveness from your toes to the tip of your head. Scan your body with your attention a few times, and then feel the entire energy field of the body as a single field of energy. And,
yeah.
and it's very beautiful yeah. to
That has helped me a lot. That's actually, since you said that about three classes ago, has helped me do much better sleeping. What Eckhart is also, I think, emphasizing here for you, Denise, is that being more present in every moment of the day with whatever is going on in your life will allow you to not to have to deal with whatever you didn't deal with during the day in your dreams, because dreams are often the manifestation of your, you know, unconscious or subconscious mind trying to work things out that you didn't fully work out in the day, that you didn't work out. And so, again, the answer is being present with whatever's going on, dealing with whatever needs to be dealt with in the moment so that it doesn't show up later on in your dreams. And I do that particularly if, you know, I am not a television watcher because I'm on television like the toddler's children has no shoes. But if I happen to be in a room and walk into a room and the television's on and it's something, a particularly disturbing image, rather than flip from that image or try to deny that I saw that image, I will literally take it in. I will accept what I have seen and deal with it in my mind so that it doesn't show up later on in a dream and frighten me or disturb me, you know? So I try to deal with whatever is going to be disturbing when it is happening so that I don't have to process it later.
Yes.
You know?
It's good. Very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
I hope that helps. Thank you.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Because, yeah, the dreams are just unmanifested stuff.
Yes.
That you didn't deal with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Occasionally it happens that one has a deeper dream, but they tend to be more rare, where you might have a sudden insight coming mm-hmm. into a dream that you didn't have before, a sudden realization, or some kind of dream images that come that have a symbolic meaning in your life and are telling you something. That can happen occasionally
mm-hmm.
also, and that's beautiful when it happens.
Well, let's go to the third modality, which is we've talked about acceptance.
Yes.
If you can't bring acceptance... Sure. enjoyment or enthusiasm. And enthusiasm, which is what Kippy from Tokyo had brought up earlier, is the higher vibration
mm-hmm.
of modality for awakening. That whenever you are enthusiastic, that there's something else that comes into play. There's an energy field created that's bigger than you are.
Yes. It's an energy that is of a creative kind, an energy that creates something, bring something into this world. I wouldn't say it's necessarily of a higher
frequency?
Frequency. It's a more powerful frequency, okay, because it's the outgoing movement that is connected, however, with the source.
Yeah. And again, we say that that is the kind of enthusiasm that's just not wild, external enthusiasm, but enthusiasm born of the spirit, enthusiasm born of consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not just talking about going to a Bears game, standing out there screaming for your team.
No, that's that's excitement. Sometimes the ego sometimes looks for states of excitement like that as substitutes for feeling the being.
For being.
Out of touch with being, then the ego looks for substitutes. Mm-hmm. And excitement is one of them. Excitement sometimes through the media, through watching a violent film, or excitement through whatever. So acceptance, then there are no clear dividing lines between these three modalities. Sometimes acceptance suddenly shifts into enjoyment.
Mm.
And sometimes enjoyment shifts into enthusiasm.
Right.
So if you, let's say you're doing something that before you would have resented, and suddenly you're able to realize, okay, there's resentment and denial inside me. Let's see if I can accept that I have to do this right now. And so suddenly you bring acceptance to it. And as you bring acceptance to it, and you're actually beginning to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah, and that is absolutely true. This thing I was telling you I had to do this weekend, I first was resenting it. I went and sat in the closet with myself so I could change my attitude. I decided I'm going to accept it. And during the process of it, I decided, let me be 100% present and see what happens. If I could just be one, and that was my focus, just to be 100% present. And I started getting a kick out of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what
We're Skyping again with a study group that has gathered at the Bodhi Tree bookstore in West Hollywood. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Oprah.
Hi, everybody, and Nick.
Hi, Nick.
I see Nick there. Okay, who's at the microphone? Is that Tatiana? Hi, Tatiana. Has a question?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I do. It's about acceptance. And Eckhart says that acceptance looks like a passive state. And I do have a big problem with that, because sometimes I feel like I accept what is more and more in my life. But at times, I feel like I have to be proactive and I have to do something. And at the same time, I know that I have to step back and be aware and be in the moment. And that creates even more stress, like I'm not getting it, like I'm doing it wrong. And I feel like a loser sometimes. I feel like I'm not getting it. So how do I make it go away, like this guilt of you should know better?
Oh, well, that's an additional question.
That's an additional question. So the first one is, okay, let's deal with the first part. And the first part is?
The first part is that you believe that when you're in a state of acceptance, you are no longer very effective, that you cannot act effectively anymore. Is that what you believe?
Absolutely.
Well, that's not the case. That's a wrong view of what acceptance means. And this is why we've been talking about bringing acceptance into what you are doing, so that acceptance is not separate from doing. Acceptance, for it to be complete, true acceptance, needs to flow into the doing rather than take you away from the doing and say, okay, there's nothing I can do. In some cases, of course, there is nothing you can do in certain situations, in which case you simply accept at this moment there's nothing I can do. There are other situations where you can do something, where doing, actually the situation requires you, if you truly respond to the situation in the present moment, it requires you to take action, to do something. And then something for you to experiment with now, from now on, is to see if you can bring this energy field of acceptance and act out of that, so that the action doesn't come out of inner resistance or a neediness.
Or denial.
Or denial or anger. It comes out of a more peaceful state. And then you will experience how powerful your action can actually be.
Yeah. Did you get that, Tatiana? That acceptance
Yes, I get it.
Flows into the doing. I think everybody who
is misunderstanding is thinking that acceptance means that I'm saying this moment is okay and so I have to live with it and then do nothing with it or be passive. He's saying you must first, in one of the earlier classes, you use the example of the bus in the mud. The wheels are in the mud.
Yes, or I'm stuck in the mud. Let's say I'm walking out somewhere, and suddenly I'm stuck in the mud to my knees.
You're stuck in the mud to your knees.
Yeah.
You must first accept that you're stuck in the mud to your knees. You can't curse the fact that you're stuck in the mud to your knees. You can't deny that you're stuck in the mud to your knees. You can't, the energy that you spend wanting not to be stuck in the mud to your knees is all wasted energy.
And it gets you stuck more deeply.
Gets you stuck more deeply.
If you're struggling.
You must accept and let the acceptance that you're stuck in the mud on your knees, flow into, now what do I do to get myself out of the mud?
Yes, and this now what do I do is a state of alert attention.
Yes.
So and that's a high frequency. It's a state of, it comes up, okay, you almost listen. It's not an auditory listening, but I'm using the analogy of listening. It's a state of alert attention. What do I do now? And suddenly, okay, there's a moment of space you don't know. And then out of that, the doing arises spontaneously, or a thought comes into your head that tells you what to do. And that'll be empowered. And that's, you practice with little things first, perhaps. Practice with things that usually you don't like doing, so you bring a little bit of resistance to it. Even simple things, you might not like going to the supermarket, or you might not like driving to work or whatever
it is. Accepting what is.
Accepting
what is. That's
what
acceptance means. I accept what is in this moment, and now we'll decide what do I do to change this moment.
Yes.
But I won't deny this moment for what it is or wish that it was something else.
And I won't feel guilty. Yeah.
And you won't feel guilty, Tatiana.
Yeah.
Now can we come to the second part or the second question, which is your mind is telling you something that you are not good enough.
Yes, like I'm doing it wrong.
Yes. So there's nothing wrong. You now know what to do, and don't believe your mind when it tells you you can't do it. You're not good enough. These are things that often the mind will throw up, especially when people try to be present or to become to be still. The mind will say, not now because I've too much on my mind. I've got too much to think. I can't do it. Not now. Possibly not now. Maybe tomorrow I'll try again.
Yes. It happens to me all the time.
The mind will always tell you why you cannot be present now, because the mind doesn't like presence, because it's the end of the mind.
Tatiana and everybody at the Bodhi Tree, thank you so much. Nick, see what a powerful influence you've had for your worrying about your... Nick's worried about his bill. Sharon's in the hotel room crying because Nick's worried about his bill. Unbelievable. Everybody at the Bodhi Tree, thank you so much for your
thank
gathering
you.
And listen to
thank
community.
You.
Bodhi Buddies. Thank you, our Bodhi Buddies. Thank you so much, Tatiana. So do you think that in these 10 weeks we have evolved? I know somebody last week had a problem with the word evolution. But do you think in these past weeks, this community, our new tribe of New Earth readers, we've evolved to a higher level of consciousness, a new way of being in the world?
Yes, I believe.
To creating a new earth?
Yes, I believe for many people it's been an opening so that this, suddenly this new dimension has come into their lives. And once it has come into your life, there's no going back. It can be obscured for a while if you get identified with the mind again or with the pain body.
Because don't you have to work on it all the time?
That helps. Even if you don't work on it, it's there. And eventually something will then happen in your life that will put you back in touch with it. It could be a crisis. But my recommendation is not to wait for a crisis in your life that forces you to become present again, but to choose presence as much as possible in your daily life, to choose the present moment, to always check inside what your relationship is with the present moment, the primordial question. What's my relationship with this moment? Is it friendly or is it dysfunctional? And that tells you everything. If it's dysfunctional, it means your future is going to manifest that. If it's friendly, open and accepting, then the so-called future is going to manifest that. It's as simple as that.
Do you ever have problems, Eckhart? Do you have problems?
No, I don't create problems.
Mm-hmm.
Challenges happen always. You don't get, life will always challenge you in one way or another, mm-hmm. and that is good.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no need to transform the challenges of life into problems by dwelling on things mentally. If you cannot take any action at this moment to turn things around in your mind, which is where worry comes in,
mm-hmm.
related to worry is problem making.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mental problem making. So I don't have problems, not because there are no challenges in my life, because no matter what stage in life you reach, there's always some kind of challenge.
Right.
Life is designed in that way. Mm-hmm. The world is not here to make you conscious. Sorry, the world is not here to make you happy.
Right.
It's here to make you conscious.
Yes. And when you bring consciousness into your life, for all of those who have been conflicted over the past weeks about their religious beliefs, when you bring consciousness into your life, what you're really saying is that you're bringing in, allowing the spirit of that which is God to flow through you and be the preeminent force in your life.
Yes.
Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes, yes, yes. It's no longer the little me.
It's not the little me.
Yeah.
You are connecting yourself to the bigger source,
yes.
to the source of all things.
Yes, and let it then flow through you. And then this is, for example, where creativity comes into your life. It's all, true creativity can only come in when you let that dimension into your life. So the source energy manifests through you. And creativity can start with a little thing, like even a tiny creative thought or some new way of looking at something is already a sign of creativity.
But most important, it's recognizing that when you can be conscious of the consciousness, when you bring the presence of that which is consciousness or the spirit of a higher power or the spirit of God into your life, and you allow that to direct your path, that then all things come to you as they should.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how you create the flow.
Yes, that's the flow, entering the flow. Yeah.
And that is how you say a new species is arising on the planet. It is arising now, and we are it.
Yes, yes. This is such an enormous shift in consciousness that's happening. It's almost, this is why I use that expression, it's almost as if we were transforming into a new species.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, a conscious species. It's almost as if humanity was only now beginning to actually wake up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But Mick, would you share with the rest of the audience at the end of this, just before we started this class, I had said a thank you to all the crews who made this possible, and Oprah.com, all the Oprah.com staff who's worked so hard the past 10 weeks, and our book club staff and producers and everybody. We had a thank you to everybody. And Eckhart, because of my book and the condition of my book, presented me with a leather-bound copy of A New Earth. Would you share with them what you wrote in my book?
I wrote a little, the little poem that I also quote in chapter 10 by the Persian poet Hafiz,
mm-hmm.
Which starts, I am a hole in the flute that the Christ's breath moves through. Listen to this music. That's the poem. I am a hole in the flute. I'm not the flute. I'm a hole in the flute that the Christ's breath, God's breath, moves through. Listen to this music. So I wrote this little poem, and I said to Oprah, she was a wonderful whole. That energy is moving through her, and the world is listening to this music.
Thank you for allowing me to do that.
Thank you.
This magnificent piece of work that you've given to us through your words. And obviously, you are the whole also.
Yes.
For which Christ's breath, the breath of God, the breath of all energy in creation, flowed through you in order for you to write this? I mean, as I have read it over and over again, now on my fourth reading, I marvel at how you were able to put these sentences together in such a way that they connect to, have connected to me and to all of you all around the world. So
yes,
thank you for this experience.
Thank you. And everybody else, of course, is also that in essence. You are the opening for that dimension to come into this world.
That's right. And anything that we do that is creative or is successful or is good comes from that source flowing through us.
Yes.
It is not of our doing.
No.
But of the greater doing.
Yes.
Of consciousness. Yes. So I want to thank you all for being a part of this really magnificent journey. It's been a part of what I know is my life's calling, to be able to be the whole for all of this to flow through. So I especially want to thank you and you and Kim for coming to Chicago these past 10 weeks, every single week, to share a new earth with all of us. As I said earlier, I really encourage all of you to let this be your summer rereading book. And if you've enjoyed it, you should pass it on. There's no greater gift than sharing it. That's why I wanted to share it with you all. There's no greater gift than sharing it with somebody that you care about and having their lives also be awakened and transformed by the words that point you in the direction of the experience of awakening. So you can all begin to rewatch our webcast this summer. Please join me next Monday, May 12th, for the start of my Soul Series webcast, because so many people said, what do we do now? Here on Oprah.com, I'll be talking to Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. She's the brain scientist who had a catastrophic stroke and experienced much of what we've been talking about in our New Earth webcast. Our Soul Series will continue throughout the summer with spiritual thinkers and authors from every walk of life. So I hope you'll keep Mondays reserved for Oprah.com. Tonight's class will be available on demand tomorrow for free here at Oprah.com. And if you want to download or watch any of our other classes, you can do that tomorrow at Oprah.com, and of course iTunes. It's free because of the generous support of Nature Made Soft Gel Vitamins. What are we going to do next Monday?
Another way of being able to continue to connect with the energy would be perhaps, one is rereading this book, of course, so not necessarily from the beginning, just opening it some
all
after
you've read
it.
All the places that you've outlined, yeah.
Yes. And also, there are lots of, I've done retreats and talks, so on my website people can get talks or retreats, and just listening to a talk, a 2 or 3 hour talk, can get put you back in touch with the presence.
That's right. And you can always download the webcast.
Yes.
Yes. And we'll be back in the fall. There's no telling what we'll do.
That's right.
There's no telling. This is just the beginning. So thank you all. And again, as Gandhi said, let's all go out in the world and be the change we want to see.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Great.